Hello, you're listening to the Talking Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew. I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
Today's episode is our first impressions of the spring 2021 season. I'm sure people are kind of like, hey, where the heck is this episode? But crazy things have been happening, so we're a little bit late on it, but better late than never.
Came back from California.
Yes, you mentioned that last episode.
I know. Well, we got it. That I was just explaining the craziness, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. We're a little bit behind.
A little moving session, but... Yeah, it's like one of those things where we probably should have gone with mid-season reviews, but unfortunately there's some shows that we're not really, you know, six episodes into. Some are like only four episodes. It's this season, like the spectrum of how many episodes are released for each show is just so broad. It's not even funny. Some are like already up in seven. Some are still at four. It's weird. So this is our first impression. So
I'm doing the best we can.
It's their fault. Not ours. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, there you go. We'll blame it on them.
Some things to note that we're not going to go over for first impressions in case you're here just for one show, which I don't know why you would be. You want to hear all of our thoughts and catch some shows that you know, maybe are not, you know, keeping an eye on. But we haven't gotten caught up on Fruits Basket, the final, unless you have.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, but that's gonna happen.
I'm afraid of it.
That's going to happen, though. I'm curious if that's going to be a two-core or not. That's my curiosity. SM Gundam Heroes, not really catching up on that one yet. I'm not sure if I will. I'm not a huge fan of the SD Gundam stuff, but I don't know if you are.
I don't know. Well, I've never tried them, so it's always been one that I've thought about trying, but yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it reminds me of Samurai Pizza Cats, which I'm sure Samurai Pizza Cats is probably inspired by that, but yeah, Thunderbolt Fantasy, I dipped in the first episode a little bit, but I haven't really gotten caught up on that one. Yuki Yuna's a Hero shorts. Unfortunately, I haven't seen anybody actually pick that up, even though I really want to watch it. Fairy Ranmaru, not really going to watch that quite yet if I do. Sestos, the Roman Fighter. Seven Knights Revolution, did you watch that one?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Mobile game stuff. Doesn't really inspire. Farewell, My Dear Kramer. I was going to start watching that one, and I realized, hey, they're talking about stuff that happened before. And I'm like, oh, that's right. There was a movie. So I don't know. I'm probably going to wait until the movie comes out over here for that one. Backflip. I haven't watched that one yet. The World Ends With You. I peeked in it, but I didn't really like the animation style. And I already know the story, so I don't know if I'll get into that one. I'm sure you probably should.
I'm debating on that one.
Debating. It's a really good story. Those Snow White Notes, I really wanted to watch that one, so that one will be one that I'll watch eventually. I'm not sure if you watched that one.
No.
Burning Kabaddi, didn't watch that one. Megalobox, Nomad, I haven't got a chance to get around to that one, but I'm sure I will. Moriarty the Patriot, I still need to get caught up on the first part, but I really do want to get back to that one. Yasuke... I probably will eventually watch that one. It's only six episodes, but man, that first part of the first episode
scared me very, very much. And it was like, no.
I'm like, man, I got to watch this. I've been waiting for it for so long. And like literally within minutes, there's suddenly mechas and magic shooting and stuff. I'm like, wait, that's not what I came here for.
Yeah, pretty much.
Eden hasn't come out yet. I think it comes out this month, later this month. We'll watch that one probably. And then the ones that are caught on Netflix is Shaman King, Eden Zero, Godzilla Singular Point, and Seven Deadly Sins 4. So that's your wrap down. Everything else we pretty much have watched. So that's what we'll get into. A lot of shows. But without further ado, we probably should jump right into it. As always, we're at otakuspray.com. It's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old. Great community in the form links at the top. Social media links on the right side. A link to our YouTube channel where I do first impressions on videos as well. And episode-by-episode impressions. And again, like you mentioned before, as soon as we get kind of things every settled down, we'll probably start doing some bringing Chris onto those videos so he can give his opinion, which we really wanted to do with our Spider impressions, which is a lot of fun debating
Spider and Shadow House are the ones that are most exciting about talking about.
I think Odd Taxi might end up into that list as well if it starts getting really mysterious as its genre is placed, which I think it could. So yeah, good stuff. So let's jump into it. We have a ton of shows to go through, and we can't be here all day. So How Not to Summon Demon Lord Omega is our first one. Isekai Mao to Shokan Shoujo no Dore Majutsu Omega, which is on Crunchyroll, running for 10 episodes, being done by Studio Tezuka Productions, Okuroto Noboru. And, of course, that was previously done by Ajay Do, so they changed studios for this particular show. Did you notice it? Notice the animation change at all?
Not really.
But yeah, I haven't gotten caught up on this one, but I will be getting around to it. But Chris apparently has been keeping up on it.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, this show screams Chris, so why not?
Right. But yeah, so the basic premise of it for the first season anyways was that a girl Ram and a girl Shera had used a summon to summon a, you know, big being to enslave and use to protect themselves and save the country, I think. Something like that. They did a summoning for some reason. They end up summoning a demon lord, which is a guy from another world, and he was summoned as his video game character that he plays as in an MMO, which is Diablo. And rather than him being enslaved, he ends up enslaving the two girls, and so they become, you know, they're supposed to be under his control, but he doesn't really do anything against them. But yeah, and then he uses his overpowered abilities to save everybody. What is the second season going into, and how are you liking it so far?
In this one, we've gone into this kind of church type group that is in the in this world. We've introduced roughly three new love interests, two of them that are already effectively in his harem, a third one which is out there that kind of looks like she'll probably be joining his harem. It is absolutely hilarious that they've full on, nothing has changed. We're going right straight into the same harem hijinks that we've had the whole time. The storyline is actually, we're doing very solid on the storyline, going right straight into kind of this church type group and how there's corruption that has seeped into it. And one of his love interests, of course, is a kind of the head of the church, and she's frustrated that the people that are under her are plotting to take her out, and so Diablo is helping her to handle all of that. A lot of fun. Introduced kind of interesting. It's always been in this background that the world that he's gone into is, of course, the game that he's playing, but it's never been kind of implied that he is a part of this world, per se. He's been summoned into that world. For the first time, we've actually have some kind of flat-out confirmation that he is a part of that world. But nobody knows him. So it'll be interesting to see where, if they do anything with that kind of tidbit that they've added in. But yeah, a lot of fun.
I think they always imply that it was a world that he was familiar, but was different.
Yeah.
In many ways than the game that he was playing.
Right. And this last couple of episodes, they have actually, confirmed that the things that he did in that game are actually, did it affect that world?
So everything etchy related, still pretty on the high.
Oh yeah,
it was pretty severely etchy, especially
with the addition to this of this cleric gal. She's if you could possibly find a character that is more etchy than the elf girl, it's this one.
Yeah, that's how not to summon Demon Lord Omega. Definitely one I'll be getting back to. Just, yeah, trying to cover a lot of other stuff as well. I knew Chris was going to talk about it, so you at least get his coverage. I've been killing slimes for 300 years and maxed out my level or slime Tao Shite 300 and Shira Nai Uchi ni level max ni Nate Mashita. And this one is streaming on Crunchyroll running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Reveroot, based on a light novel. But yeah, this one follows she was a 20-something office worker being overworked, you know, standard modern times isekai character that is doing the death march and then eventually dies at her desk. And this goddess that meets her when she dies is pretty much like, you know, I kind of favor women and I will help them out. And so I'm going to reincarnate you in another world. And she's like, oh, make me... What was it? Immortal and something else? Never aging or something like that? Yeah. And so she makes her a 17-year-old witch within this other world. It's like a fantasy world. And right when she gets there, there's a nice house that's not occupied that, you know, says on a sign, you know, anybody wants to live here, live here. And she's like, oh, hey, she must have left this here for me. And then over the next 300 years, she spends daily essentially going out, killing 25 slimes on her way to the village, turning in the gems that she gets from the slimes into the guild, and then, you know, buying what she needs, raising crops, and just living a really relaxed life. That was like her main focus. Like, I just want to live a relaxed life versus what she lived before, which was a corporate pawn and living to basically the, I wouldn't really say the 9-to-5, really kind of like the 24-hour work schedule of being overworked. And like I said, her main focus is just to relax. And of course, as comedy would lead it, she doesn't get to relax much because after those 300 years, she finds out that she has maxed out her level. She has reached level 99. She goes to the guild and she uses a little stone and it reveals that she's level 99. And even though she told the guild lady not to tell anybody, somebody overheard it and word got out that she's level 99. And so lots of different people, including a dragon and other adventurers all want to come and challenge their skill against her because she's level 99. And that kind of begins this whole shenanigans where she, even though she wants to be left alone, people keep bugging her because she's so super powerful and she wants to protect her village. And then eventually as she gains, you know, companions, she wants to protect the companions and yeah, shenanigans. She wants a normal life, a normal, peaceful life, and she's just not going to get it. So your thoughts on I've been killing slimes for 300 years and maxed out my level.
Well, this one's easy. I absolutely love it. I do love the fact that this is a kind of a Yuri harem. We have the main character and all of her, if you want to call them love interests, it's kind of funny because they're all obviously love interests in the main character, but she plays it off as this is my family of friends. And it is cute in a lot of cases. We've got the two slime girls that are calling her mama, and we've got the dragon girl who's effectively a
little sister.
We've got, so it's all over the place.
Beelzebub was big sister,
yeah.
And then Halkar was just some random girl.
So it's been a lot of fun to have all these goofy things that, like Andrew was saying, the hijinks of her trying to just be live a normal calm life, and no matter what she does, she ends up getting dragged into it. She at least got 300 years of chilling out. So
I just love, like, every time the door knocks, she just gets all depressed, like, crap, what now? It's like literally every, like, twice an episode some knock comes and she's like, oh gosh, here we go again, what's going on, I'm gonna drag it. I wouldn't classify it as Yuri in any way, shape, or form, so I'm not sure where you're getting that from. I really just classify as just cute girls because nobody's trying to get in her pants or anything like that. It's not, doesn't feel like anybody is in love with her. It's just a, like you mentioned, Laika's kind of the little sister, looks up to her master who's supposed to be training her. The two slime girls are just basically calling her mama and they want to be with her. And Beelzebub is kind of the only one that kind of I would even incline the idea of some kind of Yuri, but it's really just Aiza really likes her because she helps her out and basically allows her to be lazy. She likes everybody that allows her to be lazy. It's like, okay, can I be your pupil? No, I don't really want to do that, but I'll do all these other things. Oh, then that means I don't have to do anything. Great, cool, you're in. Come live at my house. Sure, if you do your share of cooking, you can come to my house. Anything to relax. But yeah, I'm enjoying it, definitely. It is odd because this is one of like 5 or 6 shows that Aoyuki is in. I'm hoping that they're not burning her out. Because usually if you had Aoyuki in a season, she was always kind of side characters. But she's like, I think 3 shows right now where she's a main character or at least pretty close to the main character. So yeah, she definitely sounds a lot different in this one. I think you mentioned that when you were talking about the show, is that it was hard to... It took a while before you picked up that it was Aoyuki, and I definitely had the same feeling. It was one of those ones where it wasn't until you finally heard that little draw that she has in her, like, almost kind of a roughness in her voice that she does every now and then, it definitely picks up, and you're like, oh, hey, this is Aoyuki, and that does help it. I don't think it's one of her... I don't think it's to her usual potential, unless there's a situation where she's kind of, you know, overly frantic, is when you kind of start hearing Aoyuki come out. But I do like that she has like this different role where she's not trying to push a more gruffiness to her voice, a more sadisticness to her voice. It's more of a natural use of her voice anyway. So
goofy, have fun type character, yeah, rather than a let me show you my psycho side.
Psycho or just loud.
Yeah.
Whereas Aizawa, she's like, yeah, like we mentioned, she just wants to chill. But no, I'm really, and I think a lot of my enjoyment of this series so far has been around, it's got a great cast. I think the only character I'm not liking is Halkara. I think the episode when she was introduced, and I loved when she was introduced because they literally point out, man, all we need is an elf and a demon and we're good. And then suddenly knock, 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 and there's the elf. It really does point out the absurdity to how convenient everything happens. So like every time they point out, well, this town can get attacked by somebody. Well, let's put up a shield. Something happens. Well, we need an elf and a demon. Knock, knock, knock. There's the elf and the demon. That kind of aspect of kind of playing on the fact that it's almost like it's shoveling or forcing in things, but it's acknowledging that it's forcing in things, which is hilarious. But like I said, I love the cast. It's just the elf girl is, I don't know, she's just annoying. And like I said, every one of the characters I've loved so far, but her I found really annoying, and her just whininess and always being like the center of attention, she kind of is ruining the show. Because Laika, the dragon, love her. She's adorable. She kind of reminds me of Rem. The two girls, the two slimes are adorable. I even love Beelzebub. Like her, I want to take you down and prove my worth, but then she's always kind of overcome by the fact that how much Aizawa is just all over her and doting on her. That stuff is great. I've gotten to the blue dragon, which I thought was hilarious, and I can't wait to see her more of her. And I haven't gotten into the other two characters that have listed on my anime list already, but really enjoying the cast so far. I think it's got a great amount of chemistry. And like I said, the willingness to make fun of the forced inclusion of stuff is I think where it's kind of hitting its drives. I think that's where a lot of its comedy is at.
I haven't met the rich demon yet, but I have met the ghost girl. It's going to be mixed on whether or not you like the ghost girl, because of how she's tied into the story. So we'll see.
I was going to say we need a tsundere, but technically Beelzebub is kind of tsundere. She's kind of tsundere a little bit.
Well, yeah. The blue dragon was tsundere as well. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if they drag her back into the story.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I'm not sure if I call the blue dragon tsundere. She's just kind of like chaotic. She's a chaotic character. Her whole purpose is to cause chaos. And so that's why she's that. But I haven't seen her outside of the fight that they had and right, them forcing her to make a truce. So, yeah. I've been killing slimes for 300 years and maxed up my level. Definitely pretty solid. I wouldn't say it's like you gotta watch this show, but I have been enjoying it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the chemistry, which I think is going to be different for every person that watches it. So, yeah. Very, very mellow show, too. I mean, it gets loud and crazy at times, but it's just very cutesy and cute girls doing cute things kind of show. So, with magic and I will say I'm not a fan of the animation so far. They get sloppy a lot, but there was like the fight with the dragons. That was like suddenly out of nowhere, Revroot just decides that we're going to go crazy and do some crazy animation. And I'm like, oh, hey, Revroot, you can do crazy animation. But it does seem a little sloppy at times, especially with the elf girl. So I don't know if you agree with that. Zombieland Saga, Revenge.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to get up on this one, unfortunately, but I will because I love the first season. But yeah, for those that don't know, basically girl goes to go to school one day and gets hit by a truck, and then she wakes up and she's a zombie, and she's with several other girls who have all been pretty much resurrected as zombies and are being made to be idols because you do that. And crazy shenanigans happen. But your thoughts on Revenge so far?
Did you how far did you get?
I haven't started it.
You haven't even started it? This one, I'm gonna warn anybody who has not watched it yet. The first episode is really, really hard to get through. I was very scared of this show, considering the first episode. It wasn't until the second episode that they start finally getting into their mode and going back to their, almost back to their roots. The first episode, I hesitate to mention it, but really what happens is Kotaro is kind of depressed because of a an event that they had, and so he's you realize how much his humor is important to the show as a whole, mostly because of that episode, I would say. Not that to say that he's required to have the show have fun. It's just that his humor does have a lot to do with
let's be honest, he made the first season a lot.
and that first episode he's depressed, and so the girls are trying to get him back into the for lack of a better term, the back into the groove of things. And so that whole entire first episode, you almost wanted to shut the entire thing down and say that they're done. But they get him back in, and by the second episode and on, you're already feeling that back in the swing of things, and it's a lot of fun. They're trying to get back to where they were, and so far as to what I've seen, it looks like they're having a lot of fun. They met a kind of a old school not a pop idol, but he is an idol of some sort that they looked up to. One of the girls looks up to him, and it was fun to see kind of a passing of the baton from him to them. And so it was really kind of cool to see that pass off. And of course they're going into, kind of the TV idol stuff. So it has been a lot of fun, a lot of goofiness. So yeah, I highly enjoying it so far.
Yeah, definitely. Is the music still fantastic? They always had a really fantastic mix of music.
Yeah.
Cause we had like rap and then the whole classical stuff with Yugiri and all that kind of stuff.
I'm trying to think of any songs that I've seen. They're working on a new song. So I'm going to say no yet.
No yet. Yeah.
I don't remember. There may have been one, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah. Zombieland Saga Revenge, definitely a show that I will be jumping back on here soon as soon as I get caught up with everything else. Gotta get all my first impressions out, and then I can start weeding out some stuff. Welcome to Demon School Itarumakun's second season, or Marimashita Itarumakun's second season, running on Crunchyroll for 21 episodes. They're not going to go for 24, I think they did last time. So, interesting. Must be stopping off on an arc or something like that. So, enjoying the second season so far?
Yeah, actually, it was kind of fun. It's focusing on the class president or the school president, and it's been kind of fun to see a different side of her because of a spell that was cast on her, caused her to be quote unquote basically moe. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of funny to see that side of her. And they actually broke her out of that spell and she got back to normal. But yeah, it was a lot of goofy fun. Irumakun is very, very different than a lot of shows that we're watching from season to season. And I think it's kind of refreshing to see that different side. And that I think is one of the main draws that I have to the show is just that it's so different than anything
else. Was this the one where it was the boy that was working on a fish ship because his parents are terrible parents and they sell him to a demon, the demon lord?
Yes.
And then he starts going to school?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really nice to see a really different different type of anime that just kind of works for what it's doing. It's not doing anything special. It's just, well, I guess that kind of negates what I just said. It is something special and different, but it's not an amazing show. It's just what it is, and you'll pretty much catch on whether or not you like it, because like I said, it is something very different than anything else that we're watching right now.
It was one of those ones where every now and then they would do a comedy thing in the first season. I didn't get finished with the first season, but every now and then it would do a comedy skit that was just, it catches you off guard. And you're like, holy crap, this is hilarious. Like the summoning scene was hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah. Welcome to Demon School, Irma-kun, second season. Sounds like a positive thoughts on Chris so far. I don't know why all of yours are in the same row. the Saint's magic power is omnipotent. I almost said omnipotent again. Potato, potato.
You can say it either way. So I just was teasing at you.
Marioku wa bono desu. This is the one I definitely wanted to get caught up on, but I just didn't get a chance to. And like I said, I knew Chris was going to cover it. But Funimation is running it for 12 episodes. Being done by Studio Dia Media. Source is a light novel. And yeah, apparently girl getting summoned to another world along with another hero, and they chose the other hero to be the hero, and so she's just living a normal life. Isn't that right? Didn't I get the synopsis right?
And she's living a normal life?
Yeah.
Because
she's not going to be the hero.
Wasn't this
the one where the other person was chosen to be the hero?
Yeah, they chose the other girl.
And they've already decided to go back to her now? Didn't take very long.
They're hinting that things may change soon. It'll be interesting to see what they decide.
Died. Spoiler.
I don't know about that, but this one is absolutely fantastic. I love it. It's gorgeous. The storyline is slower in pace, and I do like that they're taking their time setting everything up. It's a matter of basically each one of these guys, which of course they're all love interests, but each one of these guys are slowly finding.
Oh, I realize this is a reverse harem. Is she a Blix?
No, actually, I'm actually impressed with her. She's
very. I was getting hints of Snow White with the red hair. That's why I was thinking like it was going to have her just be normal and not have to get into all that stuff. And I give it a sense like that.
It's almost like they're trying to go for that, but it's almost like they're, because yes, like Andrew was mentioning, that in the first scene when she gets summoned into this world, the dumb prince decides, oh no, well, she's obviously the saint. So he grabs her and walks off, and effectively she gets shunned to the side and she goes her own way, which is what Andrew was talking about. She gets to do a normal life.
So that summoning was for two different people, a saint and a hero?
No, they summoned a saint. And the prince automatically assumed, because she's pretty, that she's obviously the saint.
Because this is the one that had two people was summoned and they chose the other one.
No, there is two people that were summoned, her and the other girl. The other girl was cuter, quote unquote.
Oh,
cuter.
Okay. I thought you mentioned the dumb say, which is the main character. Okay.
No, the dumb prince grabbed the other girl and walked off and said, "This is obviously the same."
She's prettier.
And say got kind of shifted off to the side, and she just went her own way. And she's, and all these guys are noticing that she has, hidden powers, obviously, which implies that she's really the saint. They haven't flat out said, they've hinted at it several times, and each one of these guys are each one thinking that she is the saint. And that's kind of the main gist of the story. Each one of these guys are each falling in love with her in their own way for different reasons.
Because she's omnipotent.
And it is, I absolutely love the way that they're doing this. The guys are are really cool guys, and they each are kind of doting on her in their own way. And she's just, in some ways, she doesn't know how to deal with it. And in other ways, she's like, she doesn't want the attention, and yet she's getting the attention, even though she's trying to just do the right thing in a lot of cases. So it really works for this storyline. I really love it. I can only suggest it a million times over.
Well, if you did enjoy Snow White with the Red Hair, which I know was a reverse harem that a lot of people, even including men, enjoyed, is that, like I said, similar vibes and similar enjoyment?
Yeah, because Snow White with the Red Hair is kind of more lower key, and this is more low key. It's not, I don't know if they're going to change that at some point. Like I said, Andrew was mentioning the whole hero aspect, or the saint thing. If that ever becomes something that's in the more forefront, which it is in the forefront because it is kind of her thing, if they bring it to the forefront as the main driver for the storyline, I hate
it. Might turn into Yona the Dawn.
Yeah, it might turn into Yona the Dawn, which
is a good show too.
Yeah,
it just didn't get very far into the story.
It's hard to say where they're going to push it, because as it stands right now, the whole charm of this is that she gets to be more low key. She's just slowly building her powers over time. And at some point, it's going to be her powers are going to be the main focus, especially since now even the kingdom has to acknowledge her, and they've already apologized to her. So it'll be interesting to see how that ends up being handled.
Saint's magic power is omnipotent. Check that out if you wish. Like I said, I'm definitely going to check that one out probably sometime this week and give my thoughts on it. But yeah, Super Cub is next. Did you watch this one?
No, I didn't. I thought about it.
You have
Do
to.
Do I?
You're going to have to. I love it.
I literally watched
this last night. I think I was up until like 1:30 just watching this show.
I kept clicking on it, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to start this one.
This one's running on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Kai. The source is a light novel, and the dramas are Slice of Life in School. And this one follows a girl named Koguma, and as the first episode's title would lead you to believe, and it actually is the case, this is a girl that has nothing. She has no parents. She lives alone. She has no friends. She has no real ambitions. She's just kind of existing. And this is kind of a really strong focus in the first episode, is the fact that she just gets on her bike, she goes to school, she sits by herself, eats her food, finishes school, goes home to her empty apartment. And it's, like I said, it's just kind of sad. I mean, she doesn't look like she's, you know, overly depressed, but you do realize that she just feels empty. And at some point, as she's riding home from school, she's passed by a guy on a little moped, Super Cub kind of bike. And this, like, random chance, she decides to turn around and go to a nearby bike shop, where she obviously sees that these things are really expensive. But the coolest old GG guy comes out the door, and of course, and says, "You looking to buy one?" She's like, "Yeah, but I don't have any money," because she doesn't have anything. And he goes, "Well, maybe a used to work." And she goes, so he goes in the shop, pulls out this really old Super Cub that he's been kind of working on, and says $100, basically. It's like a 10,000 yen or whatever. And she's like, "Well, why is it so cheap?" And he's like, "Because three people died."
Oh, she's gosh.
Like, she's like, "Okay, I'll buy it." And then, but of course, she has to get her license first. So she goes out and does some training and comes back and then buys it from him, and then he offers her a helmet and gloves, and then she starts riding this Super Cub to school and back. And basically, a lot of the focus is around how much she just falls in love with the Super Cub, because she, like I said, she had nothing before, and then suddenly now she has something, and now it's getting attention of other people. There's a classmate of hers named Reiko who has a Super Cub as well, or a moped, and so she's obviously starts communicating with Koguma about it and asking her questions and showing her different things and modifications she can make on her Super Cub to make it better, helps her find a container to put on it. Some other person offers a basket. And it's like I said, it's kind of a mixture of her kind of gaining purpose, her gaining something in her life where she had nothing, and meeting people and kind of highlighting kind of almost this background bond that a lot of people have over this particular vehicle, and how, you know, some people have had one in the past and will offer things to them and almost trade things, and just, it's just so adorable to see this poor girl who had nothing just suddenly smile, and it just brightened my day, or really technically my night, because I was in the middle of the night when I was watching this. And just every time that she smiled and just the joy that it was bringing her, it was just such an enjoyable experience. Now, I will say this show is extremely slow and atmospheric. And at the same time, it was never boring. I just loved seeing her just doing her daily route, discovering things. And it, almost like that aspect of like Nananbiori, where it's almost like the entertainment out of the monotonous. But it was just her discovering something and finding enjoyment out of something that I absolutely fell in love with. She's just a very cute character. You want to root for her. You want her to find happiness. And she's slowly finding that happiness. So, happiness. But yeah, I've absolutely been enjoying it. And I cannot wait for more of it. So, it's been fantastic. And absolutely a gem. And it's sad because I think this season, I don't think we really have any other Iyashike type of shows. And I, even though it starts out kind of depressing, seeing how much she, you know, how, what she, that she has nothing. But it's a relaxing show to kind of see her just kind of just doing the daily routine and relaxing and discovering things with her. It's never really overly loud. It's just very relaxing and healing. So I would say I think this is the only real Iyashike type of show this season, and it's definitely a huge welcome because, like I said, she's adorable, and I want to see her happy.
So are you going to put it in the Iyashike, or is it bordering on the edge? Because I would say...
like I said, besides the very beginning where it technically is a very depressing atmosphere because she has nothing, it's a very relaxing show all the way through. So yeah, I would definitely put it in the Iyashike after... Halfway through the first episode, it's Iyashike from then on.
Because the one that I was going to mention is bordering on the edge. So,
but like I said, it wasn't. You knew that she had nothing, and it kind of seemed depressing. But it wasn't like she was crying every 2 seconds. It wasn't like she was, you know, she was just kind of blank, and so it doesn't really feel depressing. But you just know that it's depressing because she doesn't have anything, and she's gaining something, and that's where that payoff is, that she now has something. And it's adorable. So, and the animation is fantastic too. Studio Kai is doing a fantastic job on it. The only, of course, upset is that they're using CGI for the bikes themselves and riding around them. But they do a pretty good job of hiding it. But there was several points where it was like really incredible animation, and it kind of surprised me. So, yeah, good on them. It's fantastic so far. I'm really looking forward to more. This is definitely one of the surprise gems for me for this season. I really wasn't. I figured it would just be cute girls doing cute things, but it just surprised me with how, I guess, storytelling through environment and what she's doing rather than, because she's very quiet. Like, she's a very, very soft-spoken person, and so a lot of the dialogue is just not really there. It wasn't until, like, Reiko gets involved with her that, it, like, suddenly out of nowhere she's talking a bunch, and Kagumi's just kind of like, okay. She's very short spoken and very quiet. It's funny because at some point she suddenly just stands up from her chair in the classroom and says, I rode a motorcycle to school today, and everybody freaks out, and suddenly it just cuts back to her just sitting there in the chair. Like, obviously she didn't do it. It was just in her head. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's her. I doubt she would stand up and just be like, I just rode a bike to school. No, it's not you. She's very soft spoken. It's almost like, because I was watching in the middle of the night and I didn't want to, you know, disturb anybody, but I was like, I almost like wanted to turn up so I can hear her voice because she's so soft spoken. Yeah. Fantastic so far. Really loving it. Very much a surprise for me. So Super Cub, definitely a suggestion for me. Look forward to making my video on it too. Dragon Goes House Hunting. Dragon, a whoa, Kau. This one is streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, being dubbed by Signal MD. based off a manga, I have not watched it. And I haven't really heard too much good things from Chris. So, and it's got like less than, what was it? Was this the one that I said was less than hentai levels of ratings on Miami List?
Yeah, you were saying that.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts? Has it improved? I know that you were kind of a little bit meh on it
earlier. I wouldn't say meh, just more along the lines of mixed. Very, very mixed. I'm not sure. I love the humor and I love the jokes because really what this is doing, think of it more along the lines of kind of a backwards way of looking at making fun of the tropes that are in RPGs. So when in most cases you see somebody will do a satire where they or a parody where they're making fun of the tropes of an RPG. So you like the bikini armor girls where they're making fun of pretty much all the RPG tropes from the perspective of the hero. This is doing it from the perspective of the demon lord and all of his followers. That's kind of the way that this is coming off as is how does a if a demon lord is roaming around, how does a demon lord build a dungeon? That's what this is. Why does, for instance, I pointed out the joke of how does a dragon who has no pockets, when you go and kill a dragon, where do you get the loot from? Well, it shows, okay, baby tooth, and he puts the baby tooth in his scales and hides his baby tooth in his scales to kind of imply this is how you get your treasure from a monster. Like I was saying, building a entire dungeon from the ground up and including the boss monsters and how the boss monsters fight and kill the heroes, and the hero, that's how they make their money for you to go and loot the dungeon later. All these tropes are in there. That's the entire humor of the show. My downside, the reason why I'm so mixed on it, is while I see the humor, it's not enough. The humor is not striking right, at least for me. I can see a lot of people. I can see people if you're not used to the whole parody of RPG tropes, you might find this absolutely hilarious. It's just not working for me. And I wish it did, because I really do kind of like a lot of the characters in this story. Letty isn't kind of, he's very, very whiny, and he comes off as just annoying in a lot of cases. And I'm still hoping that maybe the addition of this, another character that's in the intro, I'm almost, 5 to 6 episodes in by now, and I was hoping that she would have been a lot earlier. I'm hoping that she's going to be a breath of fresh air for this story and save this from the pits of despair, because right now I'm having a hard time with it. As much as I want to like this show, it's just not working for me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's Dragon Goes House Hunting. Definitely, mixed. Mixed thoughts from Chris. Battle Athletes Victory Restart. This one is streaming on Funimation. Not sure how long it's going to be going for. Being done by Studio 7. It is a original, of course, a reboot of the original series. I've only watched one episode of this one, and I can say it is technically... It does technically have the aspect of being a reboot. I do know at one point they showed like a wall with a bunch of pictures of previous winners, and I noticed... very familiar faces from previous series that were done, but it is supposed to be kind of a reboot of the series, and essentially it takes place in kind of a fictional future where a lot of these girls, I don't know if you can say fictional future at the same time, it's a futuristic telling, it's obviously probably not factual, but anyways, essentially follows a girl named Kanata, and she lives on Earth, and she is a country bumpkin.
Potato farmer,
yeah. Her family does potatoes and a lot of other things, but mainly potatoes. And did you, how many episodes you watched this?
3.
Oh, you did? Okay, so you're further than me.
I watched them this morning.
essentially, when she's traveling at some point, she ends up encountering a meteorite that strikes nearby, and she goes to check it, and there's a small girl that is climbing out of the ruins, and she says, go join the galaxy athletes thing and become the cosmic beauty, was it called?
Cosmos beauty.
Cosmos beauty. In my stead, basically. So she's like, okay, I'll shoot that hole and go get some help. And she comes back, and the craft and the girl is gone. And so, of course, when she goes up, she ends up joining and competing in it. And it's essentially a competition between different girls from different planets and the moon. For some reason, they always include the moon, even though the moon is not a planet. All the planets plus Earth's moon all compete against each other to become, yeah, the cosmic beauty thing. But yeah, I've only watched one episode, and I wasn't really too impressed. I don't know if it changes any, but I was kind of off put by how, like, crazy, what would be the term, bipolar the characters are. Like, suddenly out of nowhere, like, don't humiliate me. Oh, okay, let's do this. Don't humiliate me. It's like, what the heck? Why do you guys keep shifting in your emotions every, like, 2 seconds? Just the characters were acting very weird, and that was kind of off-putting to me. But yeah, what's your thoughts so far?
They I wouldn't say they chill out, but they each have their own little tsundere break moment. So
yeah, they're all tsundere. There you go. It's a show full of tsunderes. Everybody hates each other. Like, and I understand they're all competitive, and so you have like all these different planets, and so there is an element of them being like diehard. I'm going to step on you in order to get to the number one. But at the same time, just their like shifting in motion was a little bit weird.
It kind of like beauty pageant meets sports meet is kind of the impression that I get. It is I don't know how to put at least the first three episodes. I kind of want to like it, but because the characters are I like the characters. I wish that their motivations were a little bit more. And maybe that's something that the storyline has to explore a little bit more. Maybe they're just kind of dripping the storylines out, because a lot of the storylines are interesting, and it's like I want these storylines to be fleshed out a lot more. The motivations are kind of, as it stands right now, a lot of them are just weak in general. The main character's roommate, her entire motivation is she has a prosthetic arm.
Say that she's weak.
She has a prosthetic arm and a prosthetic leg, and so her motivation to win the cosmos. Yeah. And her entire motivation is to prove that she can become the Cosmo Beauty, even though she has the prosthetics. That's her motivation. I'm hoping that it's going to be more.
Motivation is I ran into a random
exciting
girl coming out of a spaceship that disappeared, and so I had to join.
Exactly, because of some person that I may or may not have met.
Might have been a dream.
and that's the thing is. I want the motivations to be a little bit more fleshed out. Some of them are like, I can see that can work. If you do a little bit more digging into it and not make it just surface level, because there's a couple of characters that are introduced later, like Andrew was mentioning the moon and, so you have.
It's funny, they had like the moon girl was like some religious leader. They claimed that on the moon there was like a civil war had broken out mm-hmm. previously, and now it's like this religious place, and she's got like this random kangaroo boxer that's hanging out with her. It's like, okay, sure, have a random kangaroo.
I don't think the kangaroo is tied to anybody, but the kangaroo just keeps showing up. The kangaroo is annoying as all get out.
She's like looking for the place to register, and this kangaroo just suddenly shows up.
I'm sure it's something that ties into the original series. I'm almost positive.
Yeah,
that
probably the mascot.
Kind of like the mascot character, yeah. It's
been too long since I watched the original, so don't ask me.
the moon and the... And because there's two characters that are introduced. I think you met one of them, but the other one it shows up in I think episode two. It is and these are the ones that I have a lot of hope for the backstories on, is the moon story, like Andrew was saying, that there was a civil war there. She's fighting to basically stop the civil war on the moon. And then another character that is her roommate, her storyline is she's from a family of gunrunners. And she wants to win so that she can stop the gun running to the moon. And so that's why I said
that they have a commonality. That was kind of funny, though, because they were like, okay, so a girl from each planet wins their competition there. And then they go to this one location to this competition. And oh, by the way, you have to find a roommate, otherwise you get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what? Well, you just got there. They're just going to go, well, no, Earth can't compete because she couldn't find a roommate. Wait. So our Earth does not get to compete in this thing? No, because she couldn't find a roommate. Wait, how does that work?
that's my thing, is I think that there's potential here. If they flesh out some of these stories a little bit better than what they're doing right now, like I said, I see the potential. I hope that they can cash in on that potential. And that's why I think I'm going to go ahead and keep watching this, just based on that alone. I other than that, I'm a little bit mixed on it right now.
I liked Kanata. I mean, she built a log cabin when she was like 4 years
old.
Yeah,
she did. Bare hands.
Don't make fun of me. No, I didn't want you to win because you have a prosthetic. And then they'll say it's
yeah. That was completely left field. I'm like, oh, she has prosthetics. Okay.
Well, I assume that because she was looking at her leg and it had like this little band around it. And I'm like, either that can be like a stylistic choice to have this band around her thigh, or. And then when she went to grab the luggage and she freaked out, I'm like, okay, maybe it is because she has a prosthetic and she's very mindful of it. Yeah, weird. But anyways, let's make a mug too, or Yakunara mug cup mo. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, 14-minute short each episode, being dubbed by Studio Nippon Animation. Source is a manga, and the genres are slice of life and cute girls doing cute things, I'm assuming. Your thoughts?
Just like Super Cub is your surprise, this one was my surprise. I am actually very impressed with what I walked away from this. It caught me a couple times and it made me tear up. I really am impressed with what they did in this compact little time. This is a shorter show, about 14 minutes per episode. And the best way I can describe it, because it does get kind of caught up in its, oh yeah, by the way, this is actually pottery too, and this is pottery too, and this is ceramics. And so, yeah, if you can get past a lot of that, there's some interesting stuff in a lot of that stuff. But really what I got out of this was kind of this this feel of appreciate what is in front of you. In a lot of cases, there's a lot of kind of family, friends, loving things and capturing the art of the world in general. It is a lot of what I'm getting out of this show, and it actually is working in a lot of ways, and I'm really, really enjoying it. I think that you almost want to know when you go into this, I'm not going to say it's Iyashike. Like I was mentioning earlier, this is on the kind of the cusp of it, where it's a little bit too high energy to be in the Iyashike, yet it is got a lot of the Iyashike kind of feels in there, where it's kind of more just appreciating things in front of you, and yet at the same time, you've got, what, possibly three very, very high energy characters, which is really going to knock it out of the Iyashike right away. But a lot of fun. Like I said, a lot of kind of heart catching moments in there. So it's got a lot of love in this show.
Yeah, they should be appreciative because she has plenty of friends and Super Cup Girl doesn't. Super Girl doesn't have anything. Yeah. Let's make a mug too. Check that one out if that sounds interesting to you. Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid is back with a short. Mini Dragon has been releasing as an ONA this season. And yeah, unfortunately, they're only 1 minute shorts. But as we mentioned before, take your time, Kyoto Animation. Come back when you want. I think they have Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid S supposed to be next season. I thought this was going to be that. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. I've actually, even though they're 1 minute shorts, so it's technically only like, what, 6 minutes total to watch currently what is available. they're very cute. I actually really enjoyed it. I love seeing Fafnir come back. I missed Fafnir so much. They had a power outage and he just kind of like, what is this power? How long does this power outage thing last? Because they wanted to play their game. Yeah, I love the episode with Riko making everything artsy and
yeah. Kinda, even when she did a self-portrait, she still
look in the eye.
Got Kana in there.
Kana every part is like, oh, okay. But no, it's definitely cute. I think the only thing that is the big negative to this Mini Dragon series is it just makes me want more, and yep. We're not getting more currently. We have to wait, and like I said, we'll wait until Kyoto Animation's fully ready to go and not having a lot of side projects, because I think they were doing, you know, the movies and whatnot. So yeah, it's been great, and I think if you're a Mr. Kobayashi Dragon Maid fan, you're gonna love it, even though, like I said, it's short. we haven't seen Quetzalcoatl and Shota yet, or Elma. I'm sure they'll probably pop up in a future episodes. Yeah, Higehiro, after being rejected, I shaved and took in a high school runaway, or Hige wa, or wo, soru, shoshite, joshi kose wo, hiro. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 13 episodes. This one is being done by Studio Project Number 9, the source is a light novel. And this one follows a guy named, besides the title saying, after being rejected, he shaved and took in a high school runaway, it starts out with Yoshida is this 26-year-old, I think, currently at a restaurant and confesses, not really confesses to his coworker, kind of just says, hey, you want to go back to my place? And she said, oh, I'm sorry. I haven't really told anybody, but I'm seeing somebody for the last 5 years. I'm just kind of keeping it, you know, secret. And I'm sorry to mislead you. And in kind of an upset because this girl that he really likes rejected him, he goes off and does some drinking with his friend, and then as he's walking home after getting some drinks, he ends up finding this girl named Saru, and Sayu is a high school girl, and she is a runaway. She left her home and went, I think it was from Hokkaido all the way to Tokyo or something like that. She's really far away from home, and she has no place to stay, and he's like, you know, it's dangerous to be out here in the middle of the night. You really need to go, and she's like, I don't have any money. I can't go back to my home because my parents would probably not care that I'm gone. And he decides, you know, I don't want to leave this girl here in the middle of the night. So, yeah, you can come back to my place and stay there for the night. And he kind of was intending for her to, well, he was technically drunk, so he completely forgot that he told her he could come back to her place. Very Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid is. But as he wakes up the next morning, she's still there and she has to explain that, you know, you let me stay here. And kind of through some conversations between the two of them, he kind of realizes that this girl is essentially a runaway from home. And in order to find places to stay, she just kind of hooks up with some random men, stays at their place, offers her body to them. And then when they decide that, you know, she's too much of a burden and they don't get much benefit from her body, they just discard her. And this is something that she has grown to kind of realize is what all men want. And it's the way that she can survive is just going from, you know, place to place and just offering her body. And of course, whenever she offers, well, not really, of course, but whenever she offers her body to Yoshida, he's just kind of like, no, I don't want you. I don't care about your body. You're not my type. You're a high schooler. I don't want you. And she keeps kind of thinking this is what he wants, but he keeps rejecting her. And then over time, you kind of meet his coworkers, you know, find out that there's a, you know, another love interest. There's some possibilities there. Of course, obviously trying to keep it a secret that he has a high schooler at his home, because obviously if anybody found out, he could end up in jail. But it kind of has a little conundrum of him, you know, trying to protect this girl at the same time, keeping it a secret. So, Higehiro. Your thoughts. I think that you were talking a little slightly negative about this series, so I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it.
So far, I'm actually... I don't want to... Because of one in particular situation, I don't want to totally negate it. It's I actually like it, and I love the storyline. It's a character motivations that's irritating me, and that's always going to be a frustration to me. I get too invested in characters, and I don't like a certain character, and so therefore, I hate. But I do love the story. I love the characters. I'm actually frustrated because of something that came up in the last episode I watched. I think I'm at either episode 3 or 4. So I still have at least 1 or 2 episodes left that I got to catch up on. What's kind of really neat about this story is, like Andrew was mentioning, Sayu is offering herself up to Yoshida, and Yoshida is a really cool guy. And in one in particular scene that really kind of quote unquote stands out to me, I know that everybody's going to twist my words on this, but it is what it is. She's offering herself to him again, and she's like, "Well, do you not find me attractive?" And he says, "Yes, I find you attractive. However, that is not why I'm taking care of you." And she doesn't understand this entire situation. And it goes into really kind of how well written this particular Yoshida is, really well written, of I want to take care of you because it's the right thing to do, not because I want something from you.
No, my favorite quote was, obviously, like she said, she keeps saying you're really nice. Why are you so nice? Why are you so nice to me? And at some point he's like, she says it again in response to something. He did something for her and she's like, you're really nice. And he's like, he like clenches his fist. Like he's getting an air tape.
Like
he's like,
too.
It's not that I'm nice. I'm not a nice person. It's just that every man you've been with is garbage. It's like, you have to raise your standards, girl. That was my favorite quote.
Yeah, that was a good quote as well. And this goes to how this story is written. And so don't take my, I don't like quote unquote this character as.
Which motivation of character is bothering you?
I don't like the senpai.
The senpai Goto?
There's something that happens. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but
yeah,
there's
like,
something
I'm
that happens.
I'm episode 5. Like, episode 6 just released the other day. I need to watch that before I do my video.
Yeah, and I'm left off on her reveal of what really happened, that she's not really actually with somebody.
Right.
That she wanted to be with him. And that was the last scene that I seen, and it irritated me. I'm sure that they resolve it better in the latter episodes.
I wasn't as bothered by the episodes as you are. That's fine.
At any rate, as it stands right now, I really love the storyline. It it's great.
Yeah, this one is definitely impressing me, and I think it's one of the ones where it's technically hitting on a very touchy subject that is very difficult to really address without either being very distasteful about it or just kind of going into the realms of, say, Bunny Drop. Mm-hmm. It's in a very, very difficult spot. And it's a hard one to say how much you enjoy it just because you're kind of treading in that area as well. The thing I love so much about the series so far is it has so much potential for doing some really incredible stuff. It's already hit a little bit on what Sayu's reason for leaving her home, and I'm sure that once they finally get into that, it's going to be really tragic. I'm really terrified of episode 6 because a certain somebody has returned, and I'm not sure how they're going to handle that. But it's got all the makings to be a really solid drama, and it's hitting on a particular idea that is very difficult to touch on because it essentially what he's doing seems so right. But like somebody in the later episodes will mention, I'm sure Chris has not seen this yet, somebody kind of mentions to Sayu specifically, like, you do realize this is a really good guy. He's a very nice guy. He's doing a lot of incredible things for you. He is helping you. He is trying to save you from essentially, because she doesn't want to do that. She's obviously hinted at that every time that he kind of turns and grabs her shoulder or whatever, that she obviously is terrified of doing that. She does not want to give her body away. She just thinks that's the only way that she can survive. And so he essentially is saving her from something. And if he kicks her out, she will go back to doing it. And that's his conundrum that he's stuck in, is if I push her out, she's just going to go back to basically harming herself. But if I keep her here and somebody finds out, I will end up in jail. And that's something that has to be expressed to her as well. It's like, he's a nice person, but if you do realize you're putting his life in danger. And that's really the difficult thing. Is like, this is what obviously seems like the right thing to do, is to protect her. But at the same time, due to social issues, he will be ostracized by society if anybody finds out that he's doing this, because they will assume the worst. And it's like a really crappy spot for him to be on. And that's what the main crust of the story has been so far. And like I said, I think it's doing it very respectfully. There was maybe one part where it was like a very serious scene. They decided to show a full butt shot of her in her underwear. And it's like, okay, you're undermining the scene. But for the majority of every other part of the show, it's being very respectful about the subject that it's really hitting on, which is, this is a very touchy subject, and they are not in a very good spot due to social norms. But yeah, I've been loving it so far. There's only been a couple parts where I get a little bit frustrated, but I think overall it's been doing a fantastic job of the story that it's telling. Just the light that Sayu is bringing into Yoshida's life, despite the fact that it seems like it's a very one-sided thing that's happening here. Just acknowledgement of that is excellent. But yeah, really loving it. It looks really great. Sayu is adorable. Mm-hmm. Sayu is absolutely adorable, and I want her to be happy. loving all the side characters as well. A little mixed on Mishima, even though I think that she was adorable starting out. I'm kind of starting to... It's running into nice guy syndrome, where you have main character, nice guy, and everybody is technically in love with them, and you know that it's going to just drive somebody to the brink of being upset. And so that's obvious a frustration that's going to arise at this current time, especially since we've kind of established three love interests now, that possibility there. But yeah, it's been great so far. I've been really enjoying it. Like I said, it just has a lot of potential. I just hope that it lands it. I really hope it lands it. I don't know that it's going to get anywhere due to it being a light novel and probably a long-running series, but I hope it gets to a really good chapter close as well, at least. But I've been enjoying it so far, even though I think the title is very misleading.
It really is.
It sucks, because it's like the title implies that he literally got rejected, shaved himself, and then went out and found a high schooler. He literally got rejected. He shaved, got rejected, and on the way home ran into a high school girl.
It's one of those that if you were, and it may change later on. But as it stands right now, it really, Andrew kind of hinted at it. It almost comes off like he was mentioning Bunny Drop. Yes, in a way it is. It's one of those of. And I had thought about this earlier, is the kind of like the listen to me, I'm your father. It's putting him into an either a big brother type place with Sayu, or a father figure for Sayu. One of those. And I, like I said, it may change later on when he realizes, okay, all these other girls are just being harsh and stupid and whatever, and this is the only girl that actually brings light to my life, and therefore this is the direction I want to go. It may be that, but it's as already, it stands right yeah, now, it's not doing that.
That's the difficulty, because it's already hinting at it. It's already hinting at both of them realizing that they like the other person, and so it's like, is it going to do anything with it? That's going to be the question mark. And that's again, of course, is going to be the point in which it's going to be very difficult to, yeah, is it sensationalizing it, or is it a proper story? That's where it gets difficult. And yeah, we've seen it happen in the past, unfortunately. And it gets to that point where you're like, yeah, social norms, hard to really say this is a good thing, but it is what it is. But yeah, Higehiro, definitely looking forward to more. Been pretty solid so far. Just, yeah, it can go in different directions. Osamake, rom-com where a childhood friend won't lose. Another one where its title is very misleading. Not really misleading. Or the Japanese title is Asa Nana Jimi Ga Zettai Ni Makanai Love Comedy. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, and being done by Studio Dogokobo. And the source is a light novel, and this one follows a guy named Suihara Maru, who, before this show kind of technically starts, he ends up falling in love with this child novelist, Shiro Kusa Kachi. And before he can manage to confess his love to her, she comes out that she has a boyfriend, which is a very much well-known child actor named Abe Mitsura. And he's kind of a little upset about learning this. His childhood friend Kuraha Shida decides to kind of comfort him, and then suggests to him, "Let's get revenge. You know, let's fake that we're dating, because she's confessed to him in the past and he rejected her. Pretend that we're dating. That way, she can get jealous, and then when she comes back to you, you can reject her, and you get your revenge." And they kind of start doing that, and then yeah. That's basically the gist so far. You just kind of have a bunch of people. I guess I can get into it because in the second episode, you kind of find out that another character is like every single character seems to be a childhood friend. So that's where, like I've mentioned before, kind of just throws the whole rom-com where childhood friend won't lose out the window concept. The hook that, hey, possibly this childhood friend Kuraha can win. But technically, they're all childhood friends, so any one of them can win. But yeah, your thoughts so far on Asamake?
Yeah, that was one of those things that, I think we joked about it at some point when we were talking about the concept of the story. And yeah, technically they can get away with it if they make every girl the childhood friend. I really, really loved the way that they introduced the first couple of characters. She's super forward, and I was really in love with it. As they went in and they started introducing the quote unquote other love interest that rejected him, it was like, I started really becoming really mixed on her, and it was like, I can still like it. And that's where I'm at right now is I got to the quote unquote, introduce an understanding the backstory of the other character and like Andrew was saying, the actual explanation that, oh yeah, by the way, she's a childhood friend as well. So it was like, you're not doing this and please stop that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens from this point on. I'm pretty warm on it. I do enjoy a lot of the characters so far. I can't wait to meet Maria and see how she's going to fit into this, and hopefully I can't wait to see Blondie get destroyed in some way, shape, or form, because I don't like him at all. He's a jerk.
So I'm guessing you haven't watched episode 4.
I'm guessing not.
I'm guessing it's like everything changes in episode 4, and that's kind of my issue with this series overall, is it seems really badly written. And the reason why I say that is it, like, early on with the first episode, you get the idea that there's some kind of bond between Maru, Suihara, and Shirakusa, but you don't ever see it. Like, they're establishing that they have talked before, but you never really see them actually have any kind of bond. It really does seem more like they have a separation. You only see, like, one scene where they talked, and that was the first moment that he met her and said that he liked her writing. Other than that, you don't see interaction between them in school or anything like that, and yet you're supposed to assume that they have communicated before and that he has some kind of bond with her. And then that kind of goes, that equally causes issues going forward when, by episode 4, after this big event happens where he makes a confession in front of a bunch of people, the following episode, suddenly out of nowhere, Shirakusa is acting completely different. Her personality is a lot more, I guess, snarky and goofy and silly. Now that suddenly out of nowhere, there's a love triangle of rivalry happening. It feels very weird. Like, the writing feels very weird. And so I guess the big stumbling point that I have is I can't really... And then, like, the backstory talking about certain characters, you don't really get an idea of, like, how long did he know Shirakusa in the past. It kind of implies that they knew each other for maybe one day, which
yeah,
doesn't
right?
necessarily mean that they're childhood friends, but I know that's what they're implying. It just feels very disjointed how it's telling the story. And I think that the other oddity that's happening is that, like I said, my biggest frustration is that the initial hook was... Oh, the childhood friend won't lose. Who's the childhood friend? It was Kuro at the very beginning. You're like, okay, cool. Let's see if it's maybe misdirection. Maybe it means that she's going to help him find his love, and that's how she will win. Is she really going to win? Maybe that's the whole hook is, oh, wow, this writer is telling the story because he wants to show people, here's a childhood friend, and she's actually going to win this time because all the other stories don't let the childhood friend win. And then, like I said, it destroys it by saying, well, everybody's a childhood friend. So it's like, okay, well, then the initial hook's gone. What do you have to offer? And it seems like a lot of that is kind of evident in the fourth episode when you finally kind of get a gist for what seemed like could be the going forward for it, which is everybody's kind of on the outward appearance mad at each other, but then there's still this rivalry between these two girls, and they are both going to get him and stomp on the other one in order to get him. And he doesn't know it. He's obviously completely oblivious, thinks everybody hates him. So I don't know. It's frustrating. And I think that most of my frustrations around the fact that I was hoping this would be, and I think I told myself I'm not going to believe it. And so I think it's less impactful to me, but it's still a letdown in the end. It's like, okay, well, you sold it on being the cute childhood friend that wins, and no, everybody is. So,
did you catch the white and black thing?
Yeah, Shiro and Kuro. I think she literally just says, call me Shiro. That way we can be black and white. Yin and yang. I don't know. Abi likes him. Abi's another love interest.
Is he?
Yeah.
There we go. He's a childhood friend, too.
He was just trying to help. He was trying to help. He looks up to him. Yeah. Maria was cute, too. I think out of all of them, after I got frustrated with everything, I still like Shida. I love how, yeah, like you said, how forward she was. She's not like your typical childhood friend that waits too long and then fails. She literally went after him, and she's very forward with him, and it's very cute whenever he kind of points it out, and then she freaks out and gets all embarrassed. It's very much like that, like you're not as forward as you think you are. And I think that's really, really cute. He said something to her and embarrassed her, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll stop doing that. She's like, no, you can keep doing it, but only when we're alone. He's like, wait, what do you mean? Which one? She's like, both. And plus, it's Hestia's voice, and she's absolutely a fantastic seiyuu. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, I'm way mixed on it, and I'm very frustrated with it, but it is what it is. If you're looking
so
for
what's the Dogokobo, seriously?
It looks very wonky.
Ah.
They're known for having like character on model all the time, great looking character designs, and this one just seems very off model all the time. So I don't know. It's very frustrating. Just not their usual perfection, I guess. Maybe I'm just putting it high on a pedestal. But yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Next one we have is Odd Taxi. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll for 13 episodes. And the studio is OLM and PICS, which is an original series as well. The genres are mystery and slice of life. And this one takes place in kind of a modern setting, but everybody is kind of these animal people. It's kind of like Beastars kind of thing, where everybody's actually animals and they're kind of living like humans do. And it follows a guy named Otakawa, who is a taxi driver, and he just does his daily routine, taking people from location to location. And what you find out is slowly over time, as each episode goes by, is that there's all these different people within the city that all have these different stories that are being told through the series that all interweave in some way, mostly through going through being driven somewhere by Otakawa and that being the way of interweaving them. But it's all these different stories. Like there's a group of idols, and their manager obviously seems like he's a part of a, you know, like kind of a Yakuza group. There's a debt collector guy who's a criminal that is trying to find this missing girl. We kind of find out that this missing girl was last seen in Otakawa's taxi. You kind of realize really quickly, I think in the first episode, that he's at Otakawa's place. For some reason, she's staying there and hiding away. There's this dude, Tanaka, who has like the worst luck possible. He had like pretty much an entire episode talking about his backstory, about, you know, his journey from basically elementary school to where he is now and all this misfortune he's gone through. Otakawa has a friend who is just kind of a very low paid janitor who just wants to find love. And yeah. And like I said, everybody's kind of interlinked through different happenings, and that's kind of the gist of the story so far. And I'm absolutely loving this show, and I'm really surprised too, because obviously since it's animal people, it's not really like your usual anime style. It does have the artistry or the art style trappings of anime. Like all the girls have, you know, the usual kind of wide eyes, the usual anime style to them. It is fully animated. Granted, the taxi driving around is in CGI, but it has all the trappings of anime. But it's a very different style, like I said, with these beast people. And like I said, it kind of dawned on me finally when I was doing the impressions for episode 6 video, is that the thing that reminds me most of is Doodadada. Now, granted, Doodadada has supernatural, Dullahan, and all that kind of crazy stuff happening in it, whereas this one doesn't. But it has a similar feel where you have this big city. It feels very much alive. The way it does its shots and the way it holds on different scenes, it makes it feel like a very living, breathing world that you're watching. And it has all these people that are just sprinkled throughout the city, and it jumps from person to person to tell their story. And like I said, doing a very clever way of having them cross paths and have them reference each other in a way that makes it feel very much alive and very clever writing. Like I mentioned before, having Tanaka have an entire backstory episode, throughout his entire backstory, you're getting all these little references of things that you've seen in the current time. And I think that way of writing is very clever. It's very masterful. And it's what just has me so hooked on this show so far. And I think all the characters are really likable too. Besides the comedy duo, there's this comedy duo that keeps showing up on the radio, and their whole shtick is that they're not funny. And they keep reading feedback about how not funny they are. And I assume that the writer thinks it's funny that they think they're not funny. But I got kind of annoyed by that. Early on, I was even having a desire to skip forward, which I hate having the feeling of. But they're actually starting to grow on me. They finally started. And it wasn't until they kind of separated the two of them at some point. They had to separate these two comedy duo. And I started liking them for their individuality, whereas I didn't like them when they were doing their stupid comedy routine together. But yeah, absolutely fantastic. Great storytelling. Great weaving of the character stories themselves. There is a lot of mystery in here, mainly about where this missing girl is and why she's at Otokawa's place. Like I said, the idol's manager and the kind of the shady stuff they're doing, money laundering, all that kind of stuff, or not money laundering, borrowing money from shady people, and probably how that's going to turn out pretty bad going forward. Dirty cops, a lot of stuff kind of mixed into that. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it kind of turns out. So yeah, this is definitely a gem of the season for me, and I am absolutely looking forward to more. I'm glad that it wasn't on my radar at all. It wasn't until I seen Nearly on Red, which those that don't know, he's a guy that used to be on YouTube and now he's on Twitch. I watched a lot of his stuff for his ReZero coverage, and I seen that he was covering this, and I'm like, okay, that's a sign that there's something here. I probably should check it out. And I'm glad I did, because I'm really, 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 really enjoying it. So yeah. That's my thoughts on Odd Taxi. Are you gonna check it out?
I don't know yet.
Full Dive is our next one. This one, Full Dive, the ultimate next gen Full Dive RPG, is crappier than real life. Or Kyokyoku Shinka Shita Full Dive RPG ga Jingetsu Yori mo Kusoge Datara. This one's streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio ENGI. The source is a light novel. And this one follows a guy named Hiroshi, and he's super excited because this new Full Dive, which is like a VR where you actually, your entire, it's kind of like Sword Online, where there's like a whole nerf thing where you go into it, Full Dive VR MMO is coming out, and he's super excited for it. And when he goes to buy it, he realizes that he doesn't have enough money, even though he pre-ordered it, because some bullies kind of hustled him out of some money. And as he's trying to find another place that has it for maybe cheaper, he ends up finding this shop that is run by a girl named Riona. And she ends up kind of tricking him into buying this game called Kiwami Quest, which is a really old, I think it was like 10 years ago that it was released, a failed Full Dive MMORPG VR game, which was failed because it sucks, because it's too realistic. You feel it when you get damaged in the game, you actually feel the pain. When you're running, you actually, feel exhaustion. Your actual physical self in the real world is kind of copied in. So, like, your physical abilities are kind of mirrored. Of course, your intelligence, like, everything kind of relies on you being a very smart and very athletic person in the real world. So it's very realistic in that regard. And it has a lot of really crappy mechanics and stuff that really make it very difficult to deal with. Like, if you're an event, you can't log out. All this other kind of stuff is really dumb about it. So, but anyways, he doesn't know that. So that night he gets into the game, and quickly he is met by his childhood friends, NPCs in this world. And these two childhood friend NPCs are basically arguing with him. And at some point, the guy, the brother of the two childhood friends, gets kind of in a little bit of a tussle with him, and then decides to eat a apple piece with a knife. And then Hiroshi like tackles him, and then unfortunately the knife goes through the guy's mouth into his back of his head. And so he kills his childhood friend in this game. And then he's being chased by the sister, and the entire world is basically deeming him as a murderer. And it like I said, it sucks. He's exhausted and feeling pain and wants to quit the game. But for some reason, he keeps coming back to it. But yeah, the kind of a side story they have is Hiroshi and why he just plays full dive VR games. He used to be an athlete, and after a really embarrassing competition one time, he just kind of given up on it. And that frustrates his sister, who has always kind of supported him and talked highly of him. And yeah, and for some reason he keeps playing the game, and I think it's mostly because the well-endowed Riona keeps kind of pulling him back into the game, because I don't know why he keeps playing it, because he seems to hate it. Your thoughts on Full Dive?
I actually kind of like the dark humor. I was listening to your kind of YouTube on it, and it was like,
you sounded so old when you said that.
I watched
your YouTube on it.
I watched your YouTube on it. It's one of those really weird things that when it first started, I wasn't sure if I was going to like this at all when it first started. I watch a knife go through a guy's head, and I'm like, oh no, I don't know if I'm going to like this at all. But the reaction to it afterwards, I was like, I see the humor. I'm actually kind of chuckling here and there. I'm like, I don't know if I like this or not. But as the show goes on, you start to get a feel for the humor, at least for me. I'm getting a feel for the humor, and I'm like, I want to say I don't like it, because it is a dark humor, and I do like dark humor. But at the same time, I'm not like, I make no bones about it, I'm not really into the torture and all that stuff. And that, luckily they haven't really done that, even though there is quote unquote a torture scene. They haven't really done a torture per se. It's just been really weird, dark. Isn't this funny? And you're like, actually kind of is funny because of your reaction more than anything. I don't know why, but this show is kind of working for me, and I'm like, yeah, I like it. I've decided I like it.
No torture. But let me play devil's advocate here. You've technically had him unable to log out because he was stuck in the event, which forced him to be stoned in the middle of the street by rocks, and which naturally you do get stoned by rocks. But I have to kind of clarify that. You have him stuck in a prison cell, unable to log out and escape, and having his childhood friend guy show up and spit blood all over him and haunt him for several hours. You've had him be locked down by his other girl and have his leg nearly cut off. But there has been zero torture technically in this show.
I mean, as far as dragging it out for a long, long period of time.
He was stuck in a prison cell for a very long time with his friend puking blood all over him. That's a very long time. It implied a very long time that he was stuck in there before the Misa girl showed up. No, I'm like I said, I'm just playing devil's advocate. I don't know. Like, I'm fascinated by the world. I like the concept of this. I love this idea. And like I've mentioned before, this is by the same writer that did Cautious Hero. This is Light Tucci. And Light Tucci just loves taking the norms and really warping them. Like normal concepts and archetypes, and really warping them to the point of just absurdity. And I see that in this world that he's created with Kiwami Quest, that he's actually dealing with. it's a very twisted idea of a super difficult, super realistic world that Hiroshi is having to take on. Again, like I said, it doesn't break it or anything, but it doesn't make any sense that he's... And I think that's a lot of my issues with the show overall, is I just don't like the characters. None of the characters appeal to me whatsoever. You have Hiroshi is a wine bag. He, for again, like I said, for some reason, he keeps doing something even though he hates it. He has a screwed up past, and I feel sorry for him, but it's just kind of, he's just kind of a depressing, annoying person. Riona's, I love her Seiyu. I think her character is funny, but she's overly well endowed. I don't like her character design. And Alicia is a super over the top Yandere character. I feel sorry for Martin. He's a good guy. I think the only character I like is the guy that got killed, and that's why everybody hates Hiroshi, is because they killed the nice guy. Kaede is just kind of, I understand why she is the way she is, but she's just a mean little sister. Misa, I haven't really seen too much of. She just seems like a twisted, again, I don't really care much for her character design. There's a,
we got two yandere getting ready character to fight it out. So
Genji is this jerk guy that just is self-interest. Again, don't really care. Amos was kind of funny. I just, there's not any likable characters. And so my only real hook to the show so far is just really the interesting concept here, which is a really crappy game that this guy's playing, and why he's playing it and how annoying it is the fascination that I have. Yeah, the humor is not hitting at all for me. Like you mentioned, it is a lot of dark humor. It's like I said, you're supposed to laugh at the fact that Martin, this dead ghost guy, is puking blood all over Hiroshi, and he's freaking out that he's puking blood all over him. You're supposed to laugh at the fact that he just killed this guy, and he's running away from Alicia, who's screaming like a goofy yandere with a knife in her hand, even though he just killed somebody. Again, it's just an NPC, so it shouldn't be that difficult, but it just really betrayed it very dark and grim that he killed this guy. So it is very much dark humor, and it's not hitting. It's not that I don't like dark humor. It's just that for some reason with this particular show, it's just not hitting with me. But like I said, I'm still fascinated by the world. I still like the concept. I'm just trying to find the hook there, and it might just be that we just need more of Misa, and maybe I'll like her, so...
Got two yandere's getting ready to fight each other. What's there not to love?
Who's the second yandere?
The torture girl versus Alicia.
I wouldn't call that yandere. It's just more sadistic.
Yeah, sadistic versus yandere.
Yandere is usually, technically it's crazy love. So, but yeah, it's a full dive. The next gen ultimate full dive RPG is crappier than real life. Check that out if that sounds interesting to you. Mars Red is our next one. Mars Red is streaming on Funimation, running for 13 episodes, done by Studio Signal MD. The source is a stage play, and the genres are action, military, historical, supernatural, vampire. This takes place in a fictional 1923. I have yet to figure out what has to do anything with Mars, but they are in Japan. And there are vampires in this particular setting, and the government knows that they exist, and the government is trying to keep them quelled. And there is an organization known as the Code Zero organization, which is quickly after the show starts taken over by Maeda, who is seemingly a human. He seems to have something interesting about him. I'm sure he'll probably be a half vampire, which allows him to walk in the sun. This is going to be something like that. He's super powerful, but he's supposed to be a human. He said that he is a human before, so we're going to assume that he's a human. But he leads a team of... yes, other soldiers, but also a main team of the Code Zero, which is comprised of four vampires that have kind of been converted to work with them in order to hunt down vampires. So you fight fire with fire, essentially. One is Tokuchi, who kind of seems like he's more like a... he kind of feels like the middle-aged office worker guy. He just kind of wants to go by the book and not be bothered by things. Kurusu, who is... essentially, he was bitten by a very high-ranking vampire, and so his potentials are extremely high. He just doesn't know how to tap in them quite yet. Sua, who's kind of like a ninja. He's just kind of a weird ninja character, very quiet. And then Takuchi, who is a scientist. And he... this is so funny, because he became a vampire not by being bit. He was doing experiments on vampire blood, and it messed up and splashed in his eye, and he became a vampire. But he's okay with it because he can continue to research things and be a scientist for basically forever because he's a vampire. Anyways, like I said, they essentially get reports that there's a vampire somewhere, so they go investigate. They find the vampires, and then they give them two options. They either come and work with come with us to the organization, which they will try to convert them to work with them, or die, essentially. Every person that is bitten has a chance of either being killed by the bite or actually changing into a vampire. And so they just hunt down vampires all the time. So, yeah, I wanted to like this show. I love the setting. I'm not a huge vampire fan, but I like the setting and I like the style. Very, very unique coloring and style to it itself. It's just for some reason, it just doesn't. The stories themselves never worked for me. I like I said, I like the setting and the setup. It was fantastic. The first episode kind of opens up with obviously his love interest that was back at home being turned into a vampire, and he was trying to, I guess, get into her head to make her kind of come back to her senses, and he never really does, and then kind of is pretty tragic in the end. And then ever since then, it's kind of like really kind of trying to open up the world itself slowly by slowly, but at the same time telling very short individual stories about different vampires that they're hunting down. And what I felt is, in a lot of the cases, I felt very bored with a lot of the surrounding stuff that they're getting into, and I always kind of was interested to see what these little short stories of vampires were, but it never seemed like it was enough of their focus. That, like, the one of the very first cases you have is a vampire couple. And they are kind of on the run together. They are uncovering this aspect of this artificial blood that they have created. And these two vampires were using it. And so that it eventually led to them. But it was like such a short time with this vampire couple that I never really had any connection to them in the end. I kind of felt like it was a wasted opportunity to tell the story of a vampire couple on the run from the government. So it just feels like most of the individual stories are very kind of throwaway. And a lot of its focus is trying to tell this grander story that is just not very interesting, the artificial blood. I loved Tokuichi's story where he was trying to see his... When they join this organization as a vampire, they have to give up their old life because the public can't know that they are a vampire now. So they basically are dead. And he wanted to see his wife. So they waited for this kind of candle ceremony. And Kurusu used his ability to move really quickly to essentially warp him in front of his wife so he could look like a ghost, and then warp him away so that he looks like he left as a ghost, just so that he can talk to his wife again. It was really, really cute. So it has potential. It just seems like it kind of wastes a lot of its time and doesn't focus on these really cool stories that they tell here and there. Like I said, I loved Maeda's initial story. I loved Takuichi's story. But everything else other than that has just been very kind of throwaway and kind of boring. So very, very frustrated with it. I want to love it. It has potential. Just it's not really doing much with that potential. So that's where I'm at with Mars Red. I'm not sure if I'll continue watching. I kind of do want to, but it's kind of where I'm at. All right, our next show is Combatants Will Be Dispatched, or Sentoin Haken Shinmasu. This one's streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes. The studio is JC Staff. The source is a light novel, and the creator, of course, is Natsume Akatsuki, who did Konosuba and Kimono Michi Rises Up. But yeah, this one follows a guy named Sentoin, who is known as Number 6. And he is a part of this big Kisaragi corporation that has already overthrown, I believe they mentioned it was Earth. And in order to kind of outreach their, I guess, control of the entire, you know, Earth, they went to decide to go to other worlds. And they used this new teleporting technology that has not been tested yet to teleport him to other worlds in order to spread their control of the Kisaragi corporation. And they assign him an android named Alice and then teleport him to what seems to be a fantasy world. And he's there to basically overthrow it. And kind of the underlying things that they have in this particular setting is that the Kisaragi Corporation actually awards points by doing evil deeds. And these points can then be used to buy equipment, and kind of has like an element of science versus fantasy, because he has nothing but, you know, science and technology and guns and all that kind of stuff to use in this kind of fantasy world where there's magic and demons and all that kind of stuff. After arriving there, he quickly is kind of pulled into the kingdom that he's supposed to overthrow and starts helping them because he gets paid better. But there's always kind of this underlying thing where he's supposed to overthrow this world and like I said, increase the reach of this Kisaragi Corporation. So, yeah, your thoughts on combatants will be dispatched.
I'm quite mixed on the show, mostly because the humor is kind of hit and miss for me. I do love the concept. I love the characters. A lot of the characters are really goofy and it's just, there's a ton of pure absurdity in the fact that he wins a lot of these fights for good by doing bad things. So it's kind of this really weird, absurdity and involved in a lot of that. And so in a lot of ways, I really do enjoy myself watching the show, but like I said, the humor is very hit and miss. I mean, there was one episode that in particular where I was just rolling on the floor. I thought it was just too funny. And then the next episode, it'll be, yeah, I see the humor there. I want to laugh, but it's just not there. And then the next thing, something else will happen and I'll think that it's absolutely hilarious. And so it's really been very hit and miss on what humor is funny and which ones are just missing me. So all in all, though, I am enjoying myself watching it. It's just goofy fun and I'm having fun.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is I always kind of go into these shows by Natsumi Akatsuki really kind of expecting another Konosuba. And unfortunately, with Kimono Meets You Rise Up, obviously was a disappointment for me, as those have learned or heard our review of that particular series. I was very disappointed by it. It wasn't the Konosuba I was looking for. And then, of course, when Combatants Will Be Dispatched comes out, I'm looking for Konosuba. And I think that's more of a problem with myself, as I'm trying to relate everything to basically a comedy legend, which is Konosuba. And it never really hits that. But it does feel like the writer is trying to go back to the roots of Konosuba, because a lot of these characters do have kind of characteristics that will kind of match Konosuba. You have Rose, who seems very choony at the very beginning. Or at least her grandfather wanted her, or told her that she should act that way, and it's really choony. They made an explosion reference. Snow is very kind of Aqua-esque in the idea that she's very kind of selfish and, you know, has a lot of self-interest in getting higher in the ranks at this particular kingdom military system through basically using other people and stepping on other people. Has a lot of misfortune similar to Aqua. Grimm is very, I wouldn't say that she's quite darkness, but she's pretty close darkness in the aspect that she has weird tastes. She's very weird in that regard. So it does have a lot of the trappings of Konosuba, and it has a lot of really hilarious over-the-top moments, just like Konosuba had. But I do agree, it technically has a lot of very lulling points. It's not the relentless hilarity that Konosuba was, and like I said, that's more of a problem of me expecting that when I really shouldn't. And I think a lot of it has to do with number six really isn't that great of a character. He does have like an overconfidence in himself. He thinks that he's stronger than he actually is. A lot of the ways that he wins situations by either stepping on other people or just being really dirty when other people are like, yeah, we're dealing with like a battle between a kingdom and the demon legion, but that the way that he handled that was really dirty. And it's like, well, but you still won, right? But no, we can't do it that way because you're supposed to do it in honorable combat. No, we're going to do it this way. We're going to cut off their supplies because that's the best way to win. But it's too dirty. But he does it, and that's the way that he wins. So it does have that aspect that he is in kind of absurd in the idea that he thinks he's better than he actually is, but he's not actually all that great. I think this show has the syndrome of not, I guess, acting on something that you have this unique gimmick that is really hilarious, but you never use it, which is the evil deed system. It's like very rarely, maybe once per episode, he'll have this moment where he does something really bad and he's gaining evil points. And it's like one of the golden points of the series, and they don't utilize it very much. And it's always great when they do. And maybe that's the idea, is just not kill the joke, and maybe I'm trying to force him, the writer, to have to kill the joke when he shouldn't. But that's always like the golden points. I do like the cast. I think they're great. Grimm, I didn't think I'd care much for, but she's probably been a lot of the most hilarious moments of the series, like learning about why she's in a wheelchair is absurd. Just her goofy nature is great. Rose is cute, but they haven't really done too much with her other than the fact that she really wants to bite everything because that's how she gains powers. Alice is very kind of deadpan humor. I love her mischievousness that comes out every now and then. So like I said, it has a solid cast. It has great gimmicks within it. It's just, it's not always on full cylinders, and that's kind of the unfortunate thing. But I have had a lot of hilarious laughs out of it. Like, them fixing the cube was hilarious. Them making it have, like, this terrible code word to activate it, so whenever they do the ceremonies, they have to say this thing that's inappropriate, was great, and how that just causes a big uproar in the kingdom. But, yeah, a lot of potential. Doesn't always seize on it. Has some lulling points, but there's a lot of hilarity that's kind of mixed in there as well, so... Definitely a huge step up from Kodomichi Rise Up. I think if you had Konosuba over here on the left and you have Kodomichi Rise Up on the right here, this one's falling like right in the middle. It's not quite to the Konosuba levels, but it's not, you know, the disappointment that Kodomichi was. So, yeah. That's my thoughts on it. Check out Combatants Will Be Dispatched if any of that sounds interesting to you. Moving on, we have Tokyo Revengers. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, and I'm not sure how long it's been running for, but it's being done by Studio Leiden Films. The source is a manga. And this one follows a guy named Takemichi. And Takemichi, at the current time, is, you know, doing his daily routine, going to work. Has a job where he just kind of is always apologizing. He's kind of stepped on by everybody that he comes across. Just a very passive person that is always kind of being downed. And at some point, he is watching the news, and he comes to find out that this local gang, the Tokyo Manji Gang, is involved in a dispute, and his childhood girlfriend that he hasn't seen in 12 years, has been killed in this kind of conflict that's happening with the Tokyo Manji Gang. And he's like, you know, well, that sucks. And then he goes about his normal life, and at some point, he gets pushed in front of a train, and just as he's going to get hit by the train, he ends up waking up 12 years prior, back when he was in middle school, and it's, you know, he's like, I'm not sure why I'm here, this must be a dream or something, and he's starting to kind of remember what has happened in his life when he was in middle school. A lot of his childhood he's kind of left behind, because at some point he was being bullied and under the kind of bullying of this building, Tokyo Manji Gang, at the time. And he decided to move away from that town just to get away from it all. So he's kind of remembering all these things that he'd left behind. He's remembering his girlfriend that he left behind. And realizing at some point that he's basically reliving his childhood. And after, you know, getting beat up by this gang, seeing his girlfriend again, he ends up helping this boy from these two bullies that were bullying him at this park. And kind of find out this boy that he saved was Naoto, which is his girlfriend's brother, little brother. And he kind of tells him, like, you know, hey, in the future, your sister's going to get killed by this gang, so make sure to protect her. You know, I'm going to die as well in 12 years later. And after kind of telling the brother, hey, look, protect your sister, they kind of come to agreement and they shake hands, and he gets transported back to the current times again, and he's been saved from the train by the boy, the girlfriend's brother, because he told him that he's going to die that day, so he saved him. But he says, I couldn't save my sister. So you can obviously travel back in time, so we're going to shake hands so that you can travel back in time and stop this Tokyo Manji Gang from building so that you can save my sister. And so that becomes the idea of the story going forward, is that he's kind of learning about the Manji Gang and what he needs to do in the future, and then he goes back in time to try to stop something that will prevent the Manji Gang from happening, and thus save his sister, or save this girl. So, yeah, kind of the underdog versus the gang, save the girl, travel time concept. As a lot of people have joked, it's basically Erased, but where the main character gets beat up every episode, which is very apt idea there, but... Yeah, I love this show so much, and then every now and then it does something that frustrates me, and yes, it has to do with time. My frustration really was is I like the concept of him going back and reliving his childhood in order to prevent something that's happening in the future. It's just every time it jumps forward back to the future and talks about what has changed, that's always the point in which it rears its ugly head of, oh yeah, this is, we're messing with time, and this is where things start, you know, you start having conflicts of what would technically happen if he did something different in the past and yet nothing has changed in the future. That doesn't make any sense. Or something very minor has changed, but not a whole significant amount. And that's where it's a great story. It's an underdog story. It's Save the Girl story. Everything in the past that's being told is so fantastic. The moments where something happens and you realize that they're in a very difficult situation, you feel your gut wrench. This is one point where the girlfriend, Hinata, he's just kind of just getting the attention of Mikey, who is one of the gang leaders. He gets the attention of one of them, one of the future gang leaders, and he's kind of getting into their group. But then she sees it as he's being bullied, so she comes in and slaps the guy. And you're thinking to myself, oh gosh, this is not good. You just slapped a gang leader. This is not going to end well. And it has that feeling of tension and gut wrench and that sense of drama and tension. And that's all well and good. It's just, it's always kind of the only kind of upset that happens is every time it goes in the future and it talks about the changes that happen and how things change in weird ways that shouldn't. And that's where it gets difficult. Like, if you have him get into contact with this leader in the past, you would assume that once he jumps forward, he's leaving a self behind that will then get into the gang. But it almost plays as if he never talked to Mikey ever again after he went back to the future. But it's like that you technically have a butterfly effect that you're not technically having change anything in the future besides one thing. Like this whole interaction with one of the leaders should have changed things significantly. But all it changed was one person not killing somebody. One person not knifing somebody. Really is all it changed. And that doesn't make any sense. It's more should have changed. And so that's my biggest frustration that I have is I almost want to say if you have a problem like I do with... I'm not like Chris where I... The moment time is mentioned, I cringe. It's more of a thing that I agree with Chris when you start to have these... inconsistency with how much should change based on a significant change in the past. More should be, and it's not even the butterfly effect. The butterfly effect is the idea that if he just steps on a twig, it should make it to where a tree never appears in the future. It is more of a thing of when he has a significant change, like meeting and becoming friends with one of the gang leaders, that should cause significant change in the future, but it doesn't. And so I'm almost to the point now where I just want to ignore anything that happens in the future and just focus on this great storytelling of the past because I love that stuff. I think everything that's happening in the past, that storytelling is absolutely fantastic. So that's kind of where I'm sitting. I think the drama's on point. I think the aspect of the underdog and him stepping up and realizing this is something he wants to change. He wants to get stronger because essentially in his future self, he's become very soft. So he's having to reacquaint himself with, oh yeah, I was technically a part of a group of friends who were trying to be tough kids. And he's having to get stronger through just perseverance and realizing there's something he wants to protect. And it's doing so well at telling that story. And I love Hinata and I want him to protect Hinata. Mikey's introduction was fantastic. All of these moments in the past are just great storytelling that I'm absolutely loving. I just get frustrated when it gets back in the future. And I almost want to... I wish they didn't do so many leaps back and forth. Well, it's not too many. Like, technically three so far. But I get frustrated when it gets back in the future. Because I realize the flaw of the time mechanic they're doing. And I get frustrated by it. So, that's my only big stipulating point. Is when they do talk about the time changes, it gets frustrating. So, but other than that, I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it. I think Chris would love it as well because he likes underdog stories and he likes the protect the girl, save the girl stories. So
it's definitely on my list right now.
Yeah. Looking forward to getting back into it. Definitely enjoying it so far. Just again, time stuff is a little bit shaky. You have to kind of ignore it. You have to put that suspension of disbelief in there, definitely. So yeah, Tokyo Revengers, definitely up there for me. To Your Eternity or Fumetsu no Anata e. This one is creaming on Crunchyroll, running for 20 episodes. The studio is Brains Base. The source is a manga. And of course, the creator is Yoshitoki Oima, who did A Silent Voice. And this one essentially follows, it starts off with a narrator. It's a being that is essentially observing this object that he places upon the earth. And this object has the ability to, when it is kind of stimulated by something nearby, it's able to change forms into mimicking it. So early on, it turns into a rock, and then eventually a wolf comes by and collapses on it, and it turns into the wolf. And then it eventually travels until it finds basically the wolf's owner, which is this boy that's at this abandoned village. And over time, you're kind of seeing essentially what the creator is watching. He's watching this being that is able to, like I said, mimic things as it essentially learns about life. It learns about people. It learns about emotions. It's learning about things that are kind of natural to us. It's learning slowly by its experiences with different people and different creatures about this world. And yeah, obviously I jumped into the series when it was the manga form, back when I realized it was the same creator as The Silent Voice. I loved its earlier arcs, and I eventually got to the point where it was the later arcs, like four or so arcs into it, where I kind of dropped off the series. I kind of wasn't getting much out of it. I did like the writer's ability to kind of hit on a definitely a different setting than A Silent Voice, but at the same time, some of the later arcs just got a little bit too much for me, and I just kind of got bored of it. But I did really like the concept of this, basically this object of nothingness slowly learning about emotions and the stories that are kind of being told around it that it is experiencing, that you're experiencing at the same time. But yeah, it's so funny because when I watched the adaptation, obviously they're doing a fantastic job of it. There was a couple kind of lazy points in the first episode that I noticed, but overall it's been doing a fantastic job. It wasn't until like the third episode that I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about this part in the manga, and they pulled off the adaptation of it so fantastic. I was like beside myself with how much I was like, yes, they pulled off this scene that I completely forgot about that was fantastic. They pulled it off in animation form, and they did an amazing job in animation. They animated a bear. I'm sorry. We've had issues in the past with certain other shows that were deciding to CGI bears, and so it was nice to see this gigantic, massive beast of a bear fully animated, and the fight scene with it was absolutely stellar. This particular scene in the third episode was a scene that I remember when I read it in the manga. I got a little bit emotional just because of what it was doing, what it was portraying. It wasn't that it was a sad scene, or not that it was a dramatic scene. It was just that it was a pivotal scene. And it wasn't until I watched the adaptation of it that I remembered that, but it was amplified by music, animation, everything in that moment. I actually got emotional because of how beautifully it was actually adapted. And what I got from that was that, not that the second arc was my favorite, I think the third arc was something that was, I wasn't sure I was going to enjoy, but it actually turned out to be one of my favorite arcs. And so while I'm watching the adaptation, I'm just looking forward to this third arc. But after seeing how well they made out this second arc so far, I'm like, now I'm like increasingly excited to see what they do with this third arc because of how well they're adapting it and how well they're taking this source material that I enjoyed, but then, like I said, I dropped off, and transformed it into something even better. And that has me excited for possibly this final arc that I kind of drifted away from the series because of. And if they can possibly make this into something even better and re-spark my love for the series. I don't know that the manga is still going and it will be beyond what they adapt with the 20 episodes. But if they don't adapt everything, I think so far this will get me back into the manga because of how much this is kind of reinvigorating my love for this writer. So Have you gotten into it yet?
No, not yet.
It's got a wolf.
I know.
There's a wolf,
Chris. I already seen the wolf part.
Yeah, there's a wolf, Chris.
Already seen the wolf part.
You seen episode 3?
Or the first part? The first episode?
The first part.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't watched it. I already read the entire wolf story, so...
Yeah, it's crazy because a lot of the great aspect of the story, like I said, it is a lot of its focus is around this object learning emotion, but a lot of it's like around everybody else's reaction to this thing that's very foreign. Like they did so well at how, like when they first meet this other form of him, he just seems very foreign. He seems very different. He seems very alien. But then as it's kind of learning things, like there's a really cute scene at the very end of the third episode where this girl's trying to make him learn how to thank him. Like she got something out of a tree for him and he would just devour it, but he would never respond with like a thank you. He doesn't know how to talk. And so she keeps saying, you need to say thank you or arigato. And she keeps doing this. And then eventually at the very end of the third episode, it like walks up and just says, as a wolf, arigato. It's so great. Like he's trying to mimic a human as a beast, and it's trying to mimic a human as a beast, and it's always like the weirdest thing. Like the boy at the very first episode, he's like trying to teach him how to eat, and so he does all this stuff, and the thing just does the same exact thing. It's great. They're doing a fantastic job at adapting it. It's a story that, like I said, I really want to get back into. And they're just doing a fantastic job of adapting it so far. They're knocking out the park, all the emotion. They're knocking out of the park, all the portrayal of everything, the scenes, the music, everything is on top notch. So, yeah. To Eternity. Definitely exciting. Looking for more. But that's that. Definitely check that out if that's interesting to you. Toy with me.
It's always been a frustration that I walked away from that series in general because I absolutely love the writers.
Yes, definitely different. It's definitely different. You're not schoolboy drama bullying story. It's definitely and like I said, I want to, like, we talk about with like the creator of, you know, Flowers of Evil, and how he always kind of sticks with this idea of the dirtiness of humankind. And even though it seemed like he went like completely left field getting into Happiness, where it gets into vampires, he always still seemed to have that sense of dirtiness with his writing. And so it's always nice when these writers that you fall in love with kind of go a different direction, because they always seem to kind of fall into, like the creator of Knights of Sidonia, he always seems to kind of fall into sci-fi and that kind of stuff and bioweapon. With A Silent Voice and going into To Your Eternity, it's like such a stark change of writing, but it still has the human emotion in there that you do want to support them doing something different, but you're always looking for that same feeling you have from their previous works.
Right.
So I want to support it for that aspect, but at the same time, you do kind of want to find that same joy that you found before. So, yeah. Don't Toy With Me, Miss Nagatoro is our next one, or Ichiran Naide, Nagatoro-san. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes. The studio is Telecom Animation Film. The sources of manga, genres are slice of life, comedy, and romance. And this one follows a guy named Senpai. Doesn't really give him a name. He's just known as Senpai by Nagatoro. This guy is basically, in the opening scene, he is trying to study alone and quiet in the library. And as he walks in there, he finds that it is full of three gyarus, very kind of very loud girls that are just kind of laughing about things. And he's trying to just do his studying off the side without getting bothered by it, but he's kind of course, getting agitated by how loud they are. And at some point, some girl comes over to grab a book, and he knocks over his bag, and his manga that he's been creating has kind of spread out, and all the girls start, you know, talking about it and laughing about it and making fun of his work. And as all the other girls leave, one of the girls, Nagatoro, stays behind and starts teasing him, talking about his work and the stupid aspects of what he's writing and how unbelievable it would actually be. Kind of, she tries to play out one of the scenes and realize that he's kind of trying to self-insert himself and that he would never really kind of pull off a line that was in the thing. It was something about, like, one girl was like, I've given up my entire femininity so I can become a fighter. And the guy's like, no, you're still beautiful, or something like that. But he couldn't pull off it. this kind of turns into a thing where she kind of just keeps teasing him. And in the kind of the early first episode, it kind of just really turns into her bullying him to the point where he's just in tears and she keeps doing this. And eventually, as it kind of progresses, you kind of see that she kind of starts seeing those borderline, those borders that she kind of stops at. You start seeing that she kind of is embarrassed by, you know, trying to push him to be forward. And then when he is, it kind of embarrasses her. So, and then eventually you get the other girls kind of being included and how she doesn't want them to tease her because, or tease Senpai because Senpai's her. So what's your thoughts on Don't Toy With Me, Miss Nagatoro, the controversial one?
I have came a long way on this show. That first episode was really, really hard to do. I don't know how to better describe it. And it really just comes down to the first episode, she was just flat out bullying him. And in the latter episodes, you start to see more of a, because when I first told Andrew how I felt about it, it was like, I couldn't get a read on her. And it really comes down to that. In the latter episodes, you start to see that she is more just interested in him. Yes, there's a lot of it. She points out she just loves his reactions, and then her friends pipe up in the same thing that they like his reactions. But you do realize that Nagatoro, it's more than just the reactions. She does actually have a thing for him. And as things start to kind of more, you start to feel the humor of how this show is working. She's changing over time. And at the same time, he's changing. And that goes to show you how much of a more well-written that this is. It's not just a matter of bully and then, well, he likes to be bullied and she likes to bully. And so therefore, yeah, there is that to an extent, but at the same time, it's more than that. They obviously do have a like for each other, whether it's a kind of antagonistic, and maybe eventually it'll kind of even out a little bit more. I don't think that she'll ever stop teasing him. That's obvious at this point, but it is what it is. And I am enjoying it. I really, really have gotten to the point where I just love watching this every week. So
yeah, it was a similar frustration that I have. The first episode felt very, it just felt wrong. There was nothing entertaining about it. I mean, yeah, you can probably get a lot of laughter out of everything pre him crying and her laughing about the fact that he's crying, but it felt nasty. It felt like bullying. It felt not entertaining. And that was a lot of the thing was, of course, everybody saying, no, wait. So it's like, okay, obviously something's going to change here, but it was kind of a nice thing because it feels like to me that it's kind of changing from a, yeah, she was really nasty to him, but turned into a, she was nasty and now she likes him. And there's nothing wrong with a story being told about a bully turned romance, which I think is actually pretty cute. It is something that definitely seems like it's going in the route of, is where she went from, you know, he's really fun. It's fun to see his reaction to, okay, now I'm kind of seeing that I like this guy. So when it gets to the point, and they even had a moment where he started getting emotional and she stopped. She realized I've gotten to that border again, and she didn't push him to the point where he was in full on tears. And so you're seeing that she does not want to hurt him. She just has fun with him. And it starts really quickly turning into a thing where, yeah, he's starting to get more gutsy. He's kind of improving himself because he's getting stronger. But at the same time, she's learning her boundaries and where she really shouldn't go. Because obviously, through what we see in other scenes, when she's with other people, she's kind of bored. She doesn't really like, you know, being around other people. She's on a double date. She's just really bored of the guy, and she acts different. It's not until she's with him that she feels more free to be silly and goofy. So you're obviously seeing she enjoys her time with him, and so she will gain that appreciation for him and not push him to the point of being in tears. Yeah, I was a little bit afraid with the... I only watched up to the point where they just introduced the other girls. I haven't seen the episode after that where they're going to be going after him to see, like you said, if it's going to go to turn into a case where she's going to continue to let them to I guess put on a facade that she wants to be mean to him still, just to put up with her, just to save face with her friends. But it, like you mentioned, it is fascinating to see something that, yes, coming into it, I thought it was just going to be a teasing Master Takagi-san, which I'm perfectly fine with. But then seeing it being as nasty as it was in the first episode, seeing that evolve definitely turns it into something a lot more interesting than just a comedy about a teasing girl. It's turning into possibly being something of a bully turned romance that I think will actually be pretty interesting in the end. So, and she's cute. So give it that. I mean, I understand the tan girl, best girl nature of it. And there's a lot of really funny moments in there. But like I said, it wasn't funny to me until the second episode on. That's when I can start going, okay, he's actually punching back now. He's actually going along with it in certain cases, and seeing their reaction as it feeling like they're actually in the teasing environment together rather than it just being one-sided, it's a lot more fun. So it's been a real, real enjoyment after the first episode. Just not a very fun first episode. Which is really shocking to me, because I'm like, everybody's like super big on this show and now we're here and this doesn't seem fun. So it's nice that it's evolving. So yeah, don't toy with me, Mr. Nagatoro. Definitely interesting. So I just love every time that he's like the nipple finding game, and then, like, he starts going towards her and you just have the whole thing where she's like, oh crap, he's actually gonna do it, I gotta go.
they did a tickle scene, and she of course could tickle him until he squealed, and then she dared him to tickle her back, and he was getting right up on her, and then all of a sudden, oh well, let's change this game.
I don't want to do it now. Shadow House is our next one. This one's streaming on Funimation. This is done by Studio Cloverworks, running for 13 episodes. Source is a manga, and the genres are slice of life, supernatural, and seinen. And this one follows essentially the Shadow family, which is this family, almost like a very gothic setting, big mansion. And the Shadow family are people that have no faces. Their entire physical body seems to be made up of like darkness. They emit ash or soot from their heads whenever they're kind of anxious or have negative feelings. And each of these family members, when they are reach a certain age, when they're coming of age, they are assigned a living doll. And we find out later this grandfather of the family basically brings to life dolls that will become the faces of the Shadow family members. And so they're assigned one of these living dolls. I haven't gotten to the episode where they have the debut, which the debut is where they supposedly will find out if they are suitable to be of age based on their performance between the actual family member and the living doll. But it seems to insinuate so far that the concept is that they have to have the living doll completely mimic their emotion, their appearance, their facial expressions to essentially be the face of the family member. And we follow a girl named Emilica, who is one of these living dolls. She wakes up every day, goes up to her master's chamber, cleans up all the soot that has been emitting into the bedroom, and then spend time with the master, which in this case is Kate. And like I said, Kate doesn't, even though they're supposed to kind of create this kind of bond between each other to become almost a face of them, it seems like Kate's more kind of just trying to just find entertainment, reading a book, not really paying too much attention to things, becomes kind of friendly and a friend of Emilica as they kind of spend time with each other. And then later on, when Emilica falls out of the window while cleaning it, that's when we meet another family member, another Shadow family member, and how completely in sync that she is with her living doll. And so you obviously see that there's possibly something Kate's not doing properly here, even though she has to go to her debut. On the other side, you also have, at a certain point, Emilico is able to go out into the rest of the mansion, where she works with, along with a lot of the other living dolls, cleaning up the mansion. It's huge, it's massive, and you learn about the soot phantoms, basically. Basically, if the soot stays out too long and it doesn't get cleaned up, it will kind of gather together and become a phantom, and these phantoms can harm things, so they have to go and destroy it. And if they get kind of engulfed by the phantom, they can get soot sickness, which kind of makes them almost like they're mindless. It kind of damages the living dolls. That's basically the gist so far. Just kind of the mystery of the Shadow family, the living dolls, and the phantoms and the soot all kind of mixed in there. So your thoughts?
This show has been absolutely a just way too much. I really, really have enjoyed it. It constantly going from scene to scene, going, running through different things in my head of what could this mean? What could that mean? And I absolutely love it for that. I've gotten had so much fun, you know, at the time we were texting back and forth, does it mean this or that? And it's been too much fun throwing ideas back and forth with Andrew. So yeah, love it. Can't wait to see more. And hopefully get some resolution to a lot of these different questions that we have.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the gems of the season. I was going to say the gem of the season. It's definitely a gem of the season, and I'm absolutely loving it. The mystery is just all over the place. The intrigue, the what is around the corner. It's got like so many layers to this onion of a show or a story or manga, and it's slowly unpeeling it and going to each layer, and you're learning things as you go along, and it's adding more mystery on top of that as you unpeel this layer, you find out there's another layer that's underneath there that's involved with that that you want to get to. And that's definitely what it's doing, and it's doing it in spades. Cloverworks returning after like two phenomenal shows last season, coming in with another phenomenal season episode or show this season with the animation they're doing with the show is top notch. It's got a great style to it, very gothic, very kind of dark tone to it. Yeah, it's hitting on all cylinders, and I'm loving the mystery of it. We've been theorizing on, you know, are the living dolls even dolls? Are they humans? The soot, how does the soot work? Are they controlling the soot? Is the soot in the dolls? There's all these really cool mysteries that, like I said, we're having a lot of fun really unpacking and trying to figure as it's going along, that I'm looking forward to more. Unfortunately, have not gotten caught up with the last, I think, episode, maybe two episodes, so I really do need to get back to it. But it's definitely one that I've been enjoying watching, and I'm going to enjoy kind of doing a weekly impressions on it, just because of how much it has to unpack there is excellent. And how much I think the thing that I'm enjoying more now that I'm doing other content for the Otaku Spirit is having something that you can really kind of speculate on. I mean, Spider is a great example of that, having a lot of things with misdirection and speculation just adds a whole nother element to a show. And it's what is so great about the non-Netflix method of... Could you imagine the show being a Netflix full release? It would be less fun. Spider is another example. Less fun to not have that weekly speculation. I mean, it's just like when the mangas were released for the show, or when the original source material was released. It was released on a chapter-by-chapter basis, and people loved speculating on it. To have it all kind of released in a big huge compilation of 50 volumes is not as fun. So, and this one's definitely a prime example of how much fun that speculation and that intrigue can actually create, because it's hitting the mystery, it's hitting the intrigue spot on, and the characters are great, very very fun to be around. Emiliko's very ganky and a very cute character to watch. So I'm interested to see where it goes from here, but
I am very glad that this is not as dark as it came off as.
It's got a dark theme, but not dark feel.
I was fully expecting it to be a lot darker than it actually is, and I came strictly for the aesthetic. The only
unselling thing that's happened so far was Rosemary getting the soot sickness. It was like, what the heck, dude? The eyes go all blank, and she's just going, oh. Like, she looked like the character from Zombieland Saga. It had the potential of being very dark, though. I mean, it technically still could.
There's a scene in the last episode that it was like, was that necessary? We'll see.
Yeah, Shadow House, definitely high recommendation from me. I think it's definitely a gem of the season, for sure. Another gem of the season, Pretty Boy Detective Club, or Bishonen Tantaiden. This one is streaming on Funimation, and don't know how long it's going to be going for. It's being done by Shaft. The source is a novel, and of course, the novel was created by Nisi Oisin. So that's the big hook for me coming into this show, but yeah, we'll get more into that in a minute.
This is my reminder of how much I hate Funimation right now. So,
yeah?
Yeah, this is going to be the one that Funimation is going to give me crap about watching it.
Funimation is getting angry at you for watching the show?
Yeah, it's giving me a hard time watching it. I tried to watch it.
You're having issues playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought you were saying like Funimation's coming after you in emails or something. Like, you need to stop watching this show. But anyways, this one essentially follows a girl named Mayumi Dojima. And Dojima, as she is gazing into the stars, is approached by a boy named Manabu, and or Satoen. And Satoen is very confident of his beauty, claims to be a detective, and that can figure things out, and starts kind of pointing out things about what she's doing, and eventually gets her to ask him to solve a mystery for her, which she wants to figure out essentially what happened to a star that she's seen 10 years prior. When she was younger, she was out on a picnic with her family, and she was gazing up at the star, and she's seen a bright, shining star that she basically inspired her and gave her the dream of becoming an astronaut, and so she can go out and find the star. And I guess land on it. I don't know how you land on the star, but hey, it's a dream. It's a dream. But anyways, as she's kind of, well, she told this to essentially the club, which is the Pretty Boy Detective Club that Satoen is a part of. And this Pretty Boy Detective Club is comprised of pretty boys. The rules of the Pretty Boy Detective Club is that you have to be beautiful, you have to be a boy, and you have to be a detective. And there's a fourth one later, which is you got to be a team. I think they're going to add roles as they go along, but yeah, so Satoen, who is the main kind of leader of them all, is very ganky, very high energy, has a very strong focus of like aesthetics, wants everything to be beautiful. And there's Fukuroi, who is kind of the delinquent. Everybody kind of just sees him as being a delinquent character, but he is actually like kind of pretty much just cooks for them, essentially.
Yeah, he's a cook.
Ashikaga, who is kind of the athletic one, is known for running really fast and being very athletic. yeah, very, very focused on his legs, very beautiful legs. Yubiwa, who is the artist. And then Sakaguchi, who is known for his speeches, very, very good at speaking. But yeah, this team of very well-known boys of this school, all being led by Satoen, who seems to be somebody that Dojima has never recognized before. And I think they said that he was a part of another. He's a middle schooler. That's right. He's younger. For some reason, he's a part of this club. But this Pretty Boy Detective Club is kind of well-known kind of through rumors throughout the school that they kind of solve people's problems. But anything that happened within the solving of that problem is never spoken of. It's like almost like they have this a gag order when they help them with something. And a non-disclosure, I guess, is a better way of putting it. But she also claims that like there's these problems that are caused by what they solve, which is always an interesting thing as well. But yeah, it kind of goes through them in the first few episodes of them helping her solve this mystery about what happened to the star that she apparently seen 10 years prior and has never been able to see since then, which, again, you'll get into eventually and solve that mystery. But yeah, of course, going into the show, did you want to start? How far did you get into it?
Only the first episode.
Really?
I tried to watch more, and they gave me problems.
You just got to turn on your computer and watch on your computer.
Yep.
That's what I do anymore, is watch on my computer. But no, I'm absolutely... Obviously, the initial draw is Nisi Oisin. We've loved Nisi Oisin for the Monogatari series, Katanagatari. He's an absolutely fantastic writer. A lot of his ability is in a lot of wordplay. A lot of it is in taking archetypes and breaking them. And that's, of course, what I was obviously very intrigued by with this particular series, because we're taking a writer who is probably most well known by the Monogatari series, which is basically a harem show with a main protagonist with a whole bunch of different archetype girls and messing with all those archetypes. To have him go into doing a basically reverse harem where you have a female protagonist and a whole bunch of male characters, all archetypes of typically popular male archetypes, how he is going to possibly twist that. And it was funny because when I got, you know, first couple episodes, the thing that I noticed was that he was already kind of breaking the typical female main character, which we joke a lot about calling the Brooks character, which most of these reverse harems have a female main character who is basically dumb as bricks. They just get pulled along by the male characters and have no personality or basically say anything to indicate that they have a mind of their own. And he quickly started kind of chipping away at that and having her outburst and say something about hating things that are beautiful or pretty and, you know, asking for things and being very kind of dominant in a certain way. And so I kind of started seeing inclination or an indication that he's going to be doing that with those particular characters. I unfortunately have not got far in enough to really start seeing him really kind of break characters, but he's already made me fall in love with one of the characters that I immediately at the very beginning didn't think I'd ever care for, which was Satoin. The moment that they took the characters out of the club room and had them start interacting with other people, that's when I really started seeing his writing taking off. And like I said, I fell in love with Satoin because of his absolutely absurd Genki nature, going to the Nisioisen absurd furthest distance that he usually does. And that was his interaction with this this lady that was the leader of this 20s group that was trying to capture Dojima. And like I said, that conversation was like, oh, this is the writing. This is where I love Nisioisen. And I admittedly, I wasn't really too attached to the show until that point. But that was the point which I realized, okay, here's Nisioisen. This is great. This is what I'm looking for. And I'm at this hesitation point where I'm like, this third episode, I think it was the third episode. This episode was fantastic. This was Nisioisen at his best. Anything prior to that was just me looking for Nisioisen. So I'm at this trap point where I can't really say this is gold yet because I need to see him do stuff with the other characters and what he's going to do going forward because he's got me trapped now. I'm invested, but I need to see if he continues that going forward. So I just want to put that preface out there. I wasn't fully invested, but for the fact of the writer until that third episode, and I need to see more to see if his writing will really start blossoming from that point.
Pretty sure it was the third episode because you were making promises of Nisioisen by episode three, and I was like, okay, I guess I'll go back and watch it.
Yeah, this is definitely one I would enjoy kind of sit down and watching with Chris too, because I'm sure he'll probably see things that I don't see. Like I said, me pointing out, I don't know if you got the same feel of Dojima as her kind of outburst was kind of that feeling of them, because she felt like a Brix character up until that point that she outburst. And it was like that moment where I go, okay,
when she was getting ticked off at Cook Boy because they're making fun of her dreams or something like that, and then they pointed out, no, she's the one who's not respecting her dream or something like that.
That was a later point, but I was talking about the one earlier than that where Manabu was talking about things that are pretty, or I think he was talking about her eyes because she hated her eyes. And he kept talking about her eyes and how pretty they were. And she said that she just kind of outburst that she hates pretty things. And she kind of just yelled at Satoin and everybody started laughing at the fact that she snapped at him. But yeah, it's not a big thing. But like I said, it's those little things that I notice in his writing that he's obviously doing it for a reason. And I'm looking for him breaking the Brix's character. Before then, she didn't have really much personality to her. And it was at that point where I realized, oh, wait, she does have... This is her outburst is her basically them pointing out that she's not just being, dragged along.
Yeah, basically. She does get swallowed up by the characters very quickly. Yeah. And then every once in a while she pipes up and it's like, okay, you do have something to say. But yeah, she does get swallowed by the,
just remember, because we're coming from other shows where literally Brix, they have zero personality and zero say.
Yeah, they definitely do have a lot of, but then again, Genki character pretty much dominates outside of the legs. The legs swallow this scene a lot too. So
visually, the legs take up the space. Loud or audibly, the Genki does. Yes, yes, yeah, good stuff. It was so funny because at some point she starts realizing that people are following her, and so she's panicking and running away, and then suddenly out of nowhere, Ashikaga shows up and he's on a bike, and the way that, because he's like a super sprint super speed biker, and you know how they usually kind of, they have their butt way up in the air and they're way forward. How do you get a girl to ride along with you when you're doing that? He
pick him up, pick her up with his legs.
No, she basically like hugs his neck and wraps her legs around his belly, and so he's riding with her like in a very kind of compromised position. It was just hilarious seeing him speed around with her like just holding on for dear life in a very compromised position. Yeah, it's great. Definitely looking forward to more. But yeah, that's Pretty Boy Detective Club. Hopefully another smash hit by Nisi Oisin, but we will see. We'll see. Moving on, we have Vivi Fluorite Ice Song. This one is streaming on Funimation and being done by Studio Wit Studio. The source is an original. The two creators behind this is Tape Nakatsuki, who is, of course, the creator of ReZero and Warlords of Sigrifa, and Eiji Umehara, who is the scriptwriter for ReZero and Beelzebub. And this one takes place in a future where mankind is developing AI. And it kind of starts off by explaining that mankind were, you know, developing AIs to handle multiple things so they can be very versatile. And at some point, they realized that giving different missions for an AI to handle was not good. It wasn't working out. They showed this robot that was doing computer work, and then he was responding to a baby crying in the crib, and he turns around and tries to type in the air to see if it can fix the baby. So they realize give them one focus, one mission is the best way for these AI to work. And so every time an AI is created, they give them a mission, and the mission could be, you know, mop floors or do coding or something like that, and that's their mission. And we follow a girl named Diva, and she's created with the sole mission to sing and create smiles. And so she basically starts to kind of, as she lives her life at this particular theme park, her daily focus is to kind of almost mimic what mankind has done with idols and be kind of like an idol so that she can sing and make people smile. She's not very successful. You see that her audience isn't very big. But at some point, at the opening scene of the entire series, you see that in the future, 100 years in the future, all the AIs pretty much uprise and start slaughtering humans without even blinking. So just like the scene of this massacre happening at this theme park, there's just robots just pummeling people in the head and killing them just without any question. And as Diva is doing her 100 years prior, as Diva is doing her performance, eventually this code appears in her archive, which is called Matsumoto. And it was sent into the past by a Dr. Matsumoto to make contact with Diva to tell her to essentially change time to two different tasks in order to change time so much that this catastrophe doesn't happen in the future. And so it's the whole story is kind of the span of 100 years where every so often in these certain singularity points, Matsumoto will reactivate, come to Diva and tell Diva that she needs to do some certain thing, like prevent this guy from being assassinated or prevent this space hotel from crashing into Earth, to prevent different massacres from happening that will create a divide between humankind and AIs that will eventually lead to AIs killing all humans. And that's kind of the gist so far. Throughout the entire series so far, you have a lot of focus on Diva, her like lack of wanting to essentially give up her initial mission, which is to sing and create smiles, and how she is now essentially causing issues and causing sorrow of other people, which is completely in contrast to what her actual mission was, and the conflict that she has with that. Becoming combatant when in actuality her whole desire is to fulfill her mission, which is to bring happiness to people. She's now creating sorrow. And that's been, like I said, a lot of the focus of it, a lot of AI learning emotion, the advances in technology. This is one that technically is touching on the aspect of changing time, but because it's so focused on the past and as it's building up to the future, rather than it being a focus on what happens in the future, it doesn't have the same problems that I was mentioning with like Tokyo Revengers, where you start having those conflicts that are happening. This is sticking to one singularity, and so that kind of keeps it from having that issue. It has already acknowledged the idea of parallel timelines. So essentially the moment that she changed something in the past, they're now on a different path, and that different path is causing different things to happen. So it doesn't have the same trappings of time that you would normally get. It's just literally a, how can we redirect this path of history in a different way? So I don't have much problems with the time as I did within. It looks great. Visually, it has a very unique art style to it. It is interesting because a lot of the combat sequences are great. The music's fantastic. They do play a little bit on like high techno stuff with certain action scenes. There is this kind of interesting desire that the creators have with every now and then kind of showing the AIs themselves, where they're like hyper detailed. And it's very intriguing the why they do that. And I kind of think that they're doing that specifically to kind of show how that they are still AIs and not really human. But it's always beautiful. It's very interesting that they do that. The story so far, really interesting. Like I said before, a lot of it, each one of the arcs are really kind of focused on certain set time periods. Like I said, you have the initial arc, which is the introduction to everything, where D.Va is first confronted by Matsumoto and she's supposed to protect a guy from being assassinated. Then it jumps forward 15 years and suddenly you kind of see a little bit of what has changed due to what they did before, and then go on from there to kind of go on to the next mission, which the second one was to keep the Sunrise Hotel from crashing, which, by the way, yes, we all get it. Gundam reference, a huge space colony looking hotel is going to plummet onto Earth and it's called Sunrise. I had a huge chuckle at that. But yeah, the story behind that, why it was set in the direction that it was and what effects that has on mankind and getting that to be changed, and then jump forward another, I think it was 12 years after that, the next story and the next story and next story. And they're really cool kind of self-confined stories, each one kind of hitting on different subjects. Like with the Sunrise story, a lot of its focus was on two different AIs that were built the same way, both experiencing and going different paths based on what happens after that point of them being parallel. You had an arc that was focused on the idea of AI and humans marrying each other and having relationships and what that affects. The idea of the mission of nursing and how it can be affected by being displaced. There's all these really cool little concepts of AI and human interaction that are kind of being, I guess, toyed with each of these storylines, and it's the way that it's doing, it's excellent. And like I said, it's really incredibly animated. It has a great style to it. Great music. Everything is all kind of mixed in there, and I've really, really been enjoying it so far. It's definitely the one that I'm looking forward to each week jumping into and covering on an episode by episode basis. So easy plug right there for the YouTube channel. I do my episode by episode impressions on this one, but, yeah, really, really been enjoying it. And, yeah, looking forward to more. Good little sci-fi show we kind of rarely get anymore, unfortunately. Got two really good sci-fi shows this season that, again, very rare. So, yep, that's Vivi Fluorite, Ice Song. I just realized I've been misspelling this stupid word this entire time on YouTube. I kept putting fluorite like it's like flower-ite, and apparently it's F-L-U-O-R-I-T-E.
Yeah, it's color.
I know it's a color, but I just spelled it wrong.
It's a color of a gem.
Then I had to go back and rename every single YouTube video of it. Anyways, next one we have is 86. It's 86. For some reason, they spell it out afterwards. But anyways, Screaming on Crunchyroll, currently being done by, or is being done by A1 Pictures. The source is a light novel, and the genres are action, military, sci-fi, drama, mecha. And this one takes place in the kingdom of San Magnolia. And San Magnolia is, you kind of open up with this girl named Lena who is kind of walking around the city, and you realize that everybody has the same color hair. You'll find out later that they are the race of the Alba, and all the Alba seem to have silver hair. In the second episode, you get kind of a brief backstory of how everything got to where it's at. And essentially how it happened was, quite a while back, they had this neighboring kingdom created these drones called the Legion. And these Legions were basically unmanned machines that were sent out on the battlefield to fight and take over other neighboring countries. And so the San Magnolia has been fighting the Legion for some time. We also find at some point the legion that this other kingdom had created eventually overthrew its own kingdom. So now the kingdom is destroyed and it's being overrun by this legion that is spreading to neighboring countries. And so the San Magnolia has been fighting the legion. At some point, the San Magnolia had, when their armies were getting devastated, they decided to enact two things. One was to pull all the Alba and relocate them into 85 districts in this kind of protected zone. And then they took all the other races and put them into this area called the 86th district. And those 86 will now have to fight the Legion while the Alba in the 85 districts enjoy peace, basically. You'll quickly realize that, like, the news is claiming that everything that's fighting the Legion are drones, so there's no casualties on the battlefield. Well, in actuality, the military knows what's going on. The military is actually forcing the 86, which are humans of other races, to fight the battle for them in the shadows, basically. Lena, who is part of the military, she knows what's going on. She's very much disgusted by this aspect. Whereas everybody else in the kingdom that knows that what's going on view the 86 and these other races as kind of pigs. Like, they're not even human. Send them out on the battlefield. Let them get killed. Who cares? Whereas Lena, based on her kind of experience with her father, has realized that this is kind of wrong and that they are actually humans out there fighting the battles. Well, Lena, being a part of this military, she is a part of this group which are called the Controllers. And the Controllers will put on this device called the Pararade, which will allow them to see their platoons or hear their platoons, basically hear what the platoon's hearing. So she's able to kind of tap in and talk to them on the battlefield, hear what they hear, and guide them where they need to go on the battlefield while they're on the battlefield in these kind of very archaic and not very well designed machines trying to fight to survive and fight off a legion. And so you kind of get this picture of two different perspectives. And essentially you have Lena, who is in the safety of the 85 district, you know, enjoying the luxuries of that life, while at the same time experiencing through this Pararade system, conversing and helping guide the 86 who have to go out there and fight for a bunch of people that don't even know they exist or appreciate what they do. So it's kind of creating that kind of contrast between the two sides, her inability to help them any more than what she does, but being upset at it. While at the same time, they view everybody within the 85th, all the Alba basically, as disgusting pigs as well, because they're sending them out to die. So yeah, it's basically the gist so far with 86. That was a lot to go over. This is similar to Vivi, the other sci-fi show of this season that I'm absolutely loving to death. Part of that has to do with Sawano Hiroyuki's music being in here. Part of it has to do with the fact they're using Sawano Hiroyuki's music here excellently. And then partially because I'm really enjoying, despite this being kind of the idea of a war and battles and combat, a lot of it is focused on really the drama points that are surrounding this whole setup, which is essentially one race pushing another race out and forcing this other race to have to fight for them. The fact that their unappreciated deaths are happening, getting into the Legion and possibly some interesting elements of how they continue to function. Lena and her difficulty in that she sees them as humans, but at the same time, she is technically sitting amongst other people who believe they are pigs. On the opposite end, the 86 not liking her because she is essentially in a ivory tower looking down on them as they protect the tower, which is, yeah, you can't really say you're going to be very happy with that concept whatsoever. I was afraid coming into the show that this would essentially turn into a death per episode type of series, which, you know, things like Pilot Love Song kind of dug in on, where you would have, oh, the episode opens up, get to know some character dies at the end of the episode, you're supposed to cry. But it really hasn't relied on that, and I'm really appreciative of that. I've been really more enjoying the drama beats of it, getting into the history of Lena, getting the history of Shin, the Alba, the 86, all these other races, and this conflict that's happening between the two of them, and appreciating what each side has to offer. And I'm looking forward to the future, because they've already kind of hinted at aspects that will essentially drag the war out, which would possibly force the Alba to have to do something, which I'm really curious how they will handle that, how Lena would possibly bring that attention to the rest of the Alba. Will that veil that's covering the eyes of all the citizens have to be pulled away for them to have to do something? It's opening the doors for some really great possibilities. I'm hoping it pulls it off in the end. It is technically supposed to be a two-course series that will be split. That sucks, but at the same time, if they keep up the quality they're doing now, I'm perfectly fine with it. It does use CGI for the mechas, but it does a pretty good job of kind of pulling off that animation quality. It is technically playing a little bit too much in the hyper detail, which does conflict a little bit. But I think there's so much polish in the animation outside of the CGI that it helps it kind of blend in better. So, yeah. Again, this is another one I'm doing weekly impressions on, so definitely check out my videos on that. I am really enjoying it, and you can get my extended, you know, spoiler thoughts on that series. But, yeah, really enjoying it. Unfortunately, as a series, it's hard for me to recommend to Chris, even though I really enjoy it. Because it does have cute girls dying. Cute girls will be lost, probably. So, yeah. There you go. That's 86. Next one we have is Duran, the Princess of Snow and Blood. Did you check this one out?
No.
No! Oh, my gosh. This is a great series. You should have checked it out. I'm just joking. Studio is back in record. Source is original. The genres are action, historical, supernatural. And this one's another one that takes place in a fictional 1931, so fictional history kind of thing. In this particular setup, it's the 64th year of the Meiji era, and Yoshinobu Tokugawa has remained in power. Japan has still kind of closed themselves off from the rest of the world. They have a secret source of power that they are utilizing that is kind of helping them sustain themselves. And you kind of see little inklings of different people not being very happy with this. So there's a little bit of uprising happening. But most of the focus is following a secret organization known as the Niue. And the Niue is basically a bunch of people that their sole purpose is to work in the shadows to protect the head of state. And one of the characters that we follow the main character that we follow is Sawa Yukimura. And Yukimura is a part of a tribe that has this interesting ability about them. It's called like the Blue Blood or something like that. The Karasumori clan, which has this, again, this kind of blue blood, which allows them to almost kind of pull out this inner power within themselves to make them incredibly powerful and fast and everything like that. And you'll see if you watch the show, she every time that she goes in the battle, this bird will land upon her shoulder. This kind of blue flame will envelop her, and then she becomes really powerful. And it kind of just follows her as she's her main focus early on. And this is something that I kind of wanted to go back to see where the show would go following the fourth episode, because by the fourth episode, it really does feel like her main focus for the opening of the show is kind of completed. Her main focus was that she wanted to seek out to find this Janome guy who essentially was the cause of the slaughter of her entire clan. So you get a little backstory where her entire clan is slaughtered. She's left to basically bury her entire clan by herself. This guy from the Niue organization shows up and says, hey, I can help you get revenge, but at the same time, I want to use you to, you know, work with the Niue organization. And so he trains her, and then she eventually seeks out this Janome guy. And like I said, it technically puts a closure to that story within the first four episodes, so I'm curious of what it would go to going forward after that. Because this show, I like her backstory. The characters have very little appeal. They're not very interesting. None of the characters are very interesting at all. Her backstory was interesting, but everything else in between her backstory shots, very kind of shrug. I mean, a lot of the episode-by-episode main story arcs are not very interesting, and the stories they were telling were not very interesting. It kind of has the same... I have the same feeling with this one as I do with Mars Red. There's very, very... a lot of similarities between the two of those shows. It's like you do have like these one or two arcs that are cool, but everything else was very blah. And that's really where I struggle. I do like the setting. I like the concept there. But the storytelling and everything in between is just very kind of shrug. And that's kind of where I lay with this one as well as Mars Red. It has a lot of potential there. Great setting. great alternative history, kind of sci-fi, not sci-fi, but supernatural-ish. But just nothing really, nothing to keep my interest very much. I do like the art style. It has a very kind of old school art style to the character designs. Every time Yukimura goes into combat and activates her blue blood, it looks really cool. It kind of gives her a very kind of sketchy outline to her design. So she very much so stands out, very kind of artistic. But then those combat sequences are like 5 seconds long. Like every fight sequence and she activates that are like it's literally within 5 seconds the battle's over and then we're moving on. So the fight sequences themselves aren't very long. It's just a lot of its focus is on these outer stories that just aren't very interesting. But yeah, like I said, I kind of curious to see where it goes from that episode 4 to see if what kind of focus they can have the characters go into after that point. But so far, just not very intriguing storytelling. So that's my thoughts on Jiren. I think that sounds interesting. Definitely check it out. But yeah. Koikimo is our next one. This one is Koi to Yobu ni wa Kimochi Warui. This one, of course, is roughly translated as it's disgusting to call this love. But Koikimo is streaming on Crunchyroll running for 12 episodes, being dubbed by Studio Nomad. The source is a web manga, and the genres are comedy and romance. And this follows a guy named Ryo, and Ryo, as he's going to work, he's kind of a little bit sleep-deprived, getting a little tired. He nearly falls down a flight of stairs, and this girl named Ichika randomly shows up and kind of hooks him with her umbrella and keeps him from falling down the stairs and sees that he's kind of a little bit malnourished and tired, so she says, you know, you need to eat, and so she gives him her lunch and then runs off. And then later on, after Ryo goes to work and eats the meal and then goes home for the day, he goes home and ends up running into Ichika again, who's at his house because Ichika knows his little sister, Ryo. And so they kind of have a meeting again. And he's kind of seen as a womanizer. He kind of just sleeps with a lot of women, doesn't really have any kind of connection with any of them, but kind of tries to, you know, bedazzle Ichika with his charms and his wiles, but she's kind of like, you're kind of creepy. That kind of just sparks this, I guess, inner sadistic self of him where he just instantly falls in love with Ichika and starts trying to pursue her. And so this kind of similar thing we're kind of struggling with here is that, yes, this is another age gap type of story. He is 27 years old and Ichika is 17 years old, but he's kind of doing little kind of things to try to charm her into falling in love with him by like sending flowers every single day to her house, and kind of doing nice things for her. And all the while she kind of just keeps ignoring him and saying that she's not interested, but yeah, this doesn't really stop him. So did you watch this one, Koikimo?
No,
you did not. That's surprising.
No, I didn't.
That was a surprising one. First off, the sound is terrible. The audio quality is terrible. It did seem like after like the fourth episode, it seemed like it was getting better. But yeah, the Ryo's voice actor sounded like he was recording in like a bathroom or something. And everybody else kind of was normal audio quality. The music balancing and stuff like that was way off. The intro music is way loud compared to the rest of it. So yeah, first off, audio quality is terrible. The visuals is okay. I mean, it's a rom-com, so I'm not expecting too much of visual-wise. It just works. But other than that, I really enjoy this show so far. It is absolutely really, really adorable. And I think it's helped by the fact, yes, you do have another age gap story, but Ryo isn't really kind of like overly advancing on her or anything. He's just kind of just charming her. And you kind of see a little bit in the fact that his life has changed so much since he met her that it's kind of adorable in that aspect. And the idea that he seems like he was just kind of going by day, not really paying attention to much around him, to kind of having a little bit of sunshine put into his life. And his sister obviously sees that, and that's why she kind of pushes them a little bit from the sidelines, is kind of seeing this brother that she's always been with, who's always been silent and very kind of womanizer and not really paying much respect to anything around him, suddenly, you know, asking her questions about this Ichika girl and them, you know, helping their bond a little bit improve. So it's really cute in that regard. Seeing this guy kind of have some kind of sunshine brought into his life, Ichika and her responses to all these things that he's giving her, and her kind of being her opinion being shifted a little bit based off of that. Her struggling with work or school, and him kind of, you know, creating a huge study guide for her to go through, and how cute the study guide is. It's just got a lot of really cute moments that really make me smile the entire series. So it definitely is a very cute rom-com. Very much enjoying the series overall. So yeah, if that sounds interesting to you, definitely check it out. It's definitely a recommendation for me. I think the only thing that's kind of a little bit questionable is having like this aspect of there is another love interest involved in the story that does like Ichika, who is her age, and having this 27-year-old basically almost like intimidate this boy into leaving her alone, even though he's, you know, 27 years old. But I mean, if you can look past that age gap aspect, it's a really cute story, and I'm really enjoying kind of the moment to moment interaction between the characters. So yeah, definitely solid. I guess the kind of more interesting side outside of the cutesy rom-com stuff is just kind of seeing. I'm interested to see how they unfold Ryo's story, because it's obviously showing signs that he was kind of a, I want to say a bad person in the past, but not really. And his father hated him for what he was doing with, like, you know, women and stuff like that. He gets kind of off-putting how intimidating he is with, like, Kai and this other girl that shows up that is trying to tell Ichika what kind of a womanizer he is. So he seems like he's, like, a dangerous person at times. And I'm curious if that will turn up anything, or if it's just a kind of a throwaway aspect of him having this kind of more mean side to him that comes out every now and then. So, yeah. Really enjoy it, though. That's quite chemo. Definitely a cute moments show, if you want to check that out. Dinah Zenon is the next one. SSSS Dinah Zenon. This one's streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Trigger. The source is an original, and the genres are action, sci-fi, mecha. And this one, of course, is kind of in the same universe as the SSSS Gridman series, which I absolutely loved. For those who don't know, SSSS Gridman was probably my only show of Trigger that I really, really loved. So yeah, of course, when SSSS Dinah Zenon came out and it has the same creators and everything behind it, I was super excited for it. But essentially, it follows a boy named Yomagi Asanaki. Yomagi is kind of, you know, average schoolboy going to school. And at some point, as he's walking with his friends, they take note of this girl named Yume, who is apparently known for asking boys out to places and then ditching them. And at some point, she has the same request for him. And so they set a date to meet each other at a certain location. In between this time, he ends up stumbling upon this guy named Goma, who is passed out underneath a bridge, and offers him some food. And so this Goma guy believes that Yomagi saved his life because he gave him food. And so he's like really weird.
It's going to absolutely pay him back.
Yeah, he will eventually. But anyways, at some point when he goes to meet Yume for that date, she, of course, stands him up. And then Goma manages to find her and approach her about it. And then suddenly a kaiju appears. And we find out at this point that apparently kaijus are a normal thing within this world. And kaijus randomly appear in the city and destroy things. And this Goma guy, who he quote-unquote saved by giving him food, pulls out this kind of statue of a dragon that ends up turning into this gigantic mecha robot called Dinah Zenon. And each one of these people that they've introduced so far, Yomagi, Yume, and also these other two people on the side, Koyomi and, Chisei didn't get involved at the very beginning, but these four people all get transferred into different parts of this Dinah Zenon machines. So it's kind of like the old school mecha robot transforming thing, where each part is like, there's a car that will turn into the legs. There's the, you know, the core body that will turn into the torso and the head and the arms. So each one of these are different parts of that Dinah Zenon that all come together and work together to fight the kaiju. And then later on, we find out that Goma was a part of this kaiju eugenicist group, which is essentially trying to make a world that the kaiju can live within. And he basically broke part ways with them because he didn't like what they were doing, and they're slowly unraveling the story behind the kaiju eugenists, the history between all these eugenists and how they apparently lived 5,000 years prior but died and then randomly appeared in this world. And then, like, here recently, they started kind of getting into, I guess, the words of the kaiju themselves and how they possibly are manifested by a desire to destroy the things that bind human beings. And I'm curious to see where that eventually goes into. I haven't watched this recent episode. I need to. But I like I mentioned before, I love Gridman. SSS Gridman. And one of the main reasons I like that so much was even though it kind of opened up with almost a very kind of similar, you know, typical type of kaiju versus robot type of thing, it eventually started kind of getting into the characters, it gets into the kaiju and does some really creative stuff with the characters and the kaiju. And that's what I fell in love with that series. And that's what I'm looking forward to with this series. And it kind of is already, with I think the fourth episode they got to, they're already starting to do that. And that's what I'm really looking forward to. So admittedly, the first few episodes weren't all that interesting. I still love it for the character designs. I still love it for the animation. I still love it for the directorial work. They do a phenomenal... I will always give Trigger credit for doing really cool things with... You know, just different shots, different angles of perspective, this artistry that they do. But I never really care much for storytelling that they do all the time. So I was still loving the first few episodes just because of that. And the fourth episode showed me, okay, here is where they really start taking the characters and the kaiju and the concepts and the rules of this world and start really doing some really creative stuff with it. So I'm excited to see what's going forward with it. I just, like I said, I want to preface it with the fact that, yeah, technically it had a pretty slow start, even though, like I said, I still like the character designs and the characters themselves early on. I think my only sticking point currently that I have is that Yomagi is I don't care. He's a character that I don't know why he exists in this particular setting. And I think I had a similar feeling to the main character in Gridman, but I hope they don't do the similar thing with this one, where Yomagi just has nothing going for him. You don't even know why he's there. Often he's questioning why he's even, if he should even, you know, go fight a kaiju, even though he knows the kaijus are harming people. It's like, why are you even here, guy? Just go away. At some point, they had Chisei, you know, jump in his core to fight while he was sick. And I'm like, let's just stick with this. This is good. Let's just let Yomagi be a sick boy sitting in his bed and let Chisei be in the core. We're good. Let's stick with this cast because at least Chisei has something going for him or something going for her. So yeah, that's my struggle so far. The only thing I don't really like so far is that Yomagi is just, I don't know why he's there. And he's so much focus and he has nothing going for him so far. So
you gave me a little bit of hope. I was starting to be concerned that Chisei wasn't going to get a thing. I only got two episodes in, and she still hadn't... They didn't give her a thing, and I was like, oh, what the heck?
Yeah, they're kind of turning her into backup. She's a backup pilot. Yeah, they can kick Yomagi or Koyomi out. I mean, at least Koyomi has something going for him. Yomagi doesn't. Kick Yomagi out. Nobody cares about you. He looks like the guy from Punchline, by the way. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
No connection to Punchline whatsoever. I looked it up. I thought there was going to be a connection there. Character designer or something. But yeah, that's Dino Zenon. Definitely looking forward to more crazy action stuff, goofy combat sequences, and kaiju. So, The Slime Diaries are next one. Tensura Nikki Tensai Shitara Slime Dataken. I don't think that's the title. I think it's just Slime Diaries. I think I just read the title of the regular slime.
Tensai Nikki is diary of some sort.
Oh, so I did get the right one. Crunchyroll's running streaming it, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio 8-Bit, based off of manga, spin-off manga, based off the Reincarnated as a Slime series. But what's your thoughts on this spin-off manga adaptation so far?
This actually... I really do love it, and I think that a lot of people who love the Reincarnated as a Slime will probably really enjoy it, mostly because you get to see the characters in a not constantly at war situation. It's just basically slice of life, the slime story. And for these characters, you almost want to see them in this situation. So it really, really works. One of the really nice thing, really fun things is, demon lord that, we fought in like the second arc, I want to say, the demon lord, who was, had devour similar to, the slime. He has this thing where he, a lot of kids tend to hover around him a lot and they'll climb up on him like this big old mountain. And he just goes with it. He's very, very gentle with everything around him. So, which is something that you kind of caught hint of, in the last, part of, reincarnated as a slime. So because he was trying to protect a flower that was in the middle of the road or something like that. And you get to see that a lot more of that aspect in, this show. So it's really nice to see this different side of these. I went and double checked to make sure. Yes, it is written by the same guy who wrote the original show. So I love it. It's, like I said, it's really nice to see a different side of these characters and a lot of fun.
Now, is it like, I don't know, like Tenchi Muyo or something like that, where they're technically just seen as a different light and it's a different universe? Or is it still the same universe, just not fighting all the time?
Yeah, just not fighting all the time.
Okay. Yep, that's Slime Diaries. Check that out if you weed. I still got to cut up on the second season before I can jump into that, so... I probably can watch it without, but I wouldn't have context of that guy because I don't know who that guy is. So
you absolutely can. It just,
I wouldn't know who the character is. I wouldn't know why I wouldn't know why that's funny that guy would have children climbing around him. And
you know who he is. He's the big old, Goma guy from, he looks like the guy from, Zelda, the big old pig guy.
Oh yeah, I've seen the fight with the pigs.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, that's all we have for this season. Of course, we're still watching My Hero Academia and Spider and all that kind of stuff, but yeah, it's our first impressions of the new shows coming in this season. So hope you guys enjoyed our first impressions of this spring 2021 season. Went pretty long, but that's usually how it is with the first impressions. A lot of shows to go through and tell you guys about. So hope you guys enjoyed that run through. As always, we're at otakuspirit.com. It's where you can go for our anime, new and old, great community in the form of links top, social media links on the right side, all that good stuff. And yes, a link to our YouTube channel where we hope you guys will go there and support us there. We hope you guys enjoyed. And as always, y'all take care.
Os!光が